Blog Talk Radio.
And we're back. Sorry about that, guys. Just waiting for my co-host to call back in. Shoot. And of course, like, it has to happen in the middle of a really important conversation. Let's just wait for everybody to regroup and call in. It says the show starts in 2 hours just now when I called. There we go. All right. Hello. Welcome back. Sorry.
Hi. No, thank you. Thanks for figuring this all out.
When you set up the show, like just a little bit of technical stuff. When you set up the show, you have to set it, for a time duration anywhere between 15 minutes and an hour, hour and 80 minutes, 90 minutes. Anyway, so I didn't set the time. So it was just set for 15 minutes, which is the lowest duration. Mom, go ahead and push one. Hopefully Lily can jump back in too. There we go. Okay, and then we'll wait for Lily to come back in. I know, sorry about that.
That sounds good. It's okay.
I'm sorry, whoever was talking, please continue.
I think that was Arla? Are you going to tell us about Iran and why they bombed Israel, the pop quiz? That...
Yeah, we never get to the pop
quiz.
Certainly,
I would love to. The stated reason was because Israel killed a couple of generals in the country of Iran. They took them out with a drone, interestingly enough, and Iran said that they would get them back for that, and that's what those drone attacks were. Last night, the two generals, I'm going to find it.
Cool. Yeah. And just really quick, I think that Iran made the same threats against us. If we bombed or killed anybody in their country, that they would retaliate.
And so the airstrike in Syria killed General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, who led the elite Quds force in Lebanon and Syria until 2016. According to Iran's Revolutionary Guard, it also killed Zahedi's deputy, General Mohammad Hadi Hajriahami, and five other officers. A member of Hezbollah, Hussein Youssef, was also killed. An official with the militant group told the Associated Press. The official spoke on condition of anonymity in line with group's rules. Hezbollah has not publicly announced the death. Hezbollah offered condolences to Iran for Zahedi's death and called Israel foolish when it believes that liquidating the leaders can stop the roaring tide of the people's resistance. It added in its statement that the killing will not pass without the enemy receiving punishment and revenge. So that's why they sent the drones there last night, ostensibly. Back to my original premise, I don't believe anything anyone tells me anymore when it comes to reasons for starting wars. They're all freaking crap. They're all lies. Mm-hmm. All of it.
Yeah.
They just want to kill MFers. I'm glad Lily's back.
Well, there's reasons. They're just horrible reasons. This idea of Israel being the supreme, people, the chosen people. It's mind-boggling. What a stupid reason to kill people. It's a very stupid reason.
They're all stupid reasons. They're all below
me. Can it be really that insane?
Insane or satanic. Pick one. Or both.
Yes, and I was just listening to a program with Scott Ritter talking about how, and I'm half Jewish, so I'm not. I don't know. I guess you could say self-hating Jew or whatever. I wasn't raised Jewish.
Just going to call you a self-hating Jew, but go ahead.
Oh. Well, that's cool. And a racist. He was saying that Purim it was actually a celebration of genocide. It's when, and I'm sorry if I get this wrong, it's when Samuel told Saul, you have to kill all these people, and he let some of them live, but then went back and killed the rest of them, and that's Purim. Does anybody know the story of Purim? I mean, can you imagine having a big holiday where you celebrate killing a bunch of people? I hope the U.S. doesn't have any equivalent of that. I guess, you could take a crucifixion, it's kind of creepy.
Thanksgiving.
Celebrate. Just killing of turkeys.
Well, and Indians, Native Americans. But
we're not celebrating killing them. We're celebrating a time, even if it was, just short or fictional or isolated, when people got along and loved each other and sat down and broke bread. But this is an actual celebration of killing. Like if we had a celebration of killing. Yeah, look it up. I can also share the video that I watched. Don't see anything. But can you imagine if our Thanksgiving was sitting down and celebrating the genocide of the Native Americans at the hands of the settlers? Like, that would be considered so, so heinous.
Does anybody know how to spell Purim? I'm looking it up now.
Purim is my guess.
That is how you spell it.
Holiday. Okay, hold on. I got it. Definitely stay signed out of Google. I'm not getting... okay. Jewish holiday that commemorates the saving of the Jewish people from annihilation at the hands of an official or... I can't say that word. Empire named Haman. As it is recounted in the Book of Esther... Haman was a royal vizier, V-I-Z-I-E-R, of the Persian king something, Ashaharahar. That's all that Wiki says.
Well, I'll look up the sort of rebuttal to that, and we can listen to it after a bit. I'll just take a moment to find that. I did want to share that anyway, and I was trying to remember, what was the gist of that? Why did I want to share that? And so I'm glad this topic came up.
Well, and it kind of seems like the Jewish Halloween. Everybody dresses up, and that was something that Rabbi Shmuley did just recently and dressed up as, like, if anybody else would have dressed up like Rabbi Shmuley did for this holiday, they would have been called an anti-Semite. Like the big nose, and like posted something, directly to Candace Owens about after she was fired, dressed up as this, the grossest depiction of a Jew that I've ever seen, in order to, basically like laugh at Candace Owens.
Yeah, I've been thinking about the firing of Candace Owens as well. I didn't know that about Rabbi Shmuley, but it's just very bonkers. It's very inverted, the idea
the whole
that
thing.
It's okay to dress up like that for Purim and mock one's own racial stereotype. I don't know. There's something really effed up about that.
Well, yeah, especially since, and we'll get back to the good news report in just one second.
It's like a bad news report.
I know, but especially since Candace Owens technically got fired because she called Rabbi Shmuley's daughter a hag, which is anti-Semitic. That's what they're claiming, is that calling somebody a hag is an anti-Semitic term, which, it's just crazy to me that people are actually saying that the term anti-Semite is ever changing, that anything that a Jew feels that they are oppressed by is anti-Semitic. You know, it's just not. Go ahead.
Oxford definition of hag is a witch, especially one in the form of an ugly old woman, often used as a term of disparagement for a woman, and short for hagfish. Nowhere
okay,
does
no,
it say Jew.
Right, right. You okay? I think I'll probably play later on in the show a little bit of an interview with Candace Owens and another rabbi, which is infuriating. Which basically, oh, it was some kind of a rhyme. It was like, you know, the I'll think of the term, but it was like, you know, the term that I don't want to mess it up, but I'll look it up. Well, Mom is going on with the good news report or the everything is stupid report, and we'll get back to that. Okay.
Well, I actually do have some good news today. Okay.
Oh,
and
I'll just also say
on.
Really fast. Hag also has a Scottish Northern English origin, meaning a soft place on a moor or a firm place in a bog. And anyway, it's a little bit of a stretch to say that hag is definitely anti-Semitic slur. Okay, so sorry about that. Don't mean to.
They were gunning for Candace Owens because she was not agreeing with sending money to help Israel. And so
she
came out publicly to say that. This has been going on for months, Danielle. And yes, that was ostensibly the straw that broke the camel's back. And keep in mind, I think Owens is a brilliant woman. She knows what she's talking about. It goes back to my original point, which is the American people, by and large, are done with sending money to foreign countries because of what they do with it once they get it. We send it for the right reasons. We say we're sending it for the right reasons, but it never works out that way. Including
right, kind of like our tax dollars,
that
right?
It is our tax. Exactly.
No, I mean, like,
and
if we say that we're going to fix a road with tax dollars, the Dems would take it and fund, you know, child gender reassignment surgeries.
Yes.
Or
okay,
the administrative salary.
Who knows?
Anything
like
else other
food.
Than what it said, what the stated purpose was.
Right, to feed demons. It's to feed demons, okay? And so here's the thing. Kate came in and said, I just don't think, you know, we're there yet. You're right, Kate. We're not there yet. But what I'm telling you is more than ever before in my 62 years. And perhaps I'm in an echo chamber. Perhaps I'm in a silo. But everybody's like, no effing way, not one more effing dollar, not one more soldier, not one more son. We're done sending. We're done. And so perhaps, you know, we'll get our way or perhaps not. There's been some indications that they're just going to do whatever the F they want, even when we make it very clear what we want. But here's the good news. Are you ready? The CDC cleared itself from reporting COVID vaccines are not responsible for fatal heart problems in teens. Can I get a trombone or something? We found a tweet from NBC News, a known agent of truth, sarcasm, that says the CDC has released a report finding that the COVID vaccine had no role to play in the sudden and often fatal heart problems occurring in teens and young adults. Everyone can rest well now. So now that you know that was sarcasm. But speaking of good news, I really do have some. Exactly. The
little late on the uptake, but
lost.
I got it.
It's okay. Have that ready because I sat back in my chair and just laughed. We're talking about young, healthy athletes dying all over the United States and all over the world. But they've cleared themselves. But really, really, really actual good news about COVID. Senator Rand Paul to investigate Dr. Fauci's alleged secret CIA visits prior to COVID-19 outbreak. Again, right back where we started, that there are agencies in our country that are all around the globe starting wars and rumors of wars and causing havoc all over our planet. And the main evildoers are the CIA. Keep in mind that I still have at the top of my list John Brennan as someone that I want to see tried and hung for treason. Apparently, Senator Rand Paul has publicly declared that his intent to delve deeper into the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic by examining what he describes as secret off-the-books trips made by Dr. Anthony Fauci to the CIA prior to the outbreak. I have said all along that what we're finally going to get to it, and it wasn't just a whoopsie. We all know it came from the lab. It has been my supposition and my firm belief that they did it intentionally, that they released COVID on the world intentionally, and apparently the CIA has its hands all over it. The Kentucky senator and medical doctor revealed to DailyMail.com that his ongoing investigation aims to uncover the full scope of Fauci's interactions with the CIA, especially given the intelligence agency's ambiguous stance on the pandemic's origins. Dr. Fauci, who served as the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, NIAID, until his recent department, is under scrutiny for his alleged frequent undisclosed visits to the CIA. While the Department of Energy and FBI lean towards the theory that COVID-19 leaked from a lab in Wuhan, China, the CIA's official position remains that the virus probably originated from animals. They're still hanging on to that. We have another whistleblower from the CIA that says that the scientific community that was commissioned to look into the origins of the virus actually voted 6-1 that it came from the lab and that they were overruled by their superiors at the CIA. Rand Paul told the Daily Mail. In 2023, the Gateway Pundit reported that a CIA whistleblower had stepped forward claiming the CIA manipulated the investigation into the origins of COVID-19. According to letters from House Coronavirus Subcommittee Chairman Brad Winstrup and House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Turner, the CIA offered significant monetary incentives to officials to shift their findings. Coronavirus Subcommittee Chairman Brad Winstrup, he's from 2nd District in Ohio, and House Intelligence Committee Chairman Rep Mike Turner, he's also from Ohio, sent a separate letter to CIA Director William Burns and former CIA COO Andrew McCritis, shedding new light on the agency's actions regarding the origins of COVID-19. We haven't stopped. That's the good news. The Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic, Select Subcommittee, and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, HPSCI, together the committees, have received new and concerning whistleblower testimony regarding the agency's investigation into the origins of COVID-19. A multi-decade senior-level current agency officer has come forward to provide information to the committees regarding the agency's analysis into the origins of COVID-19, the letter read. So it goes on to talk about what the whistleblower is doing. Senator Paul's investigation also encompasses the financial aspects, including a notable increase in the NIAID budget for biomedical weapons research under Fauci. In 2015, the NIH, under the direction of Dr. Tony Fauci, awarded a $3.7 million grant to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So this is what our tax dollars is going for, just what we were just talking about. In an exclusive interview with DailyMail.com, Paul disclosed that Fauci, the former director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, was friendly with the CIA, which is notably one of the few federal agencies that still has not clearly established the COVID-19 origins. On Tuesday, Senator Paul released a stunning report in which he discovered that 15 different federal agencies knew that the Wuhan laboratory in China was trying to create a COVID-19 virus since 2018. Not one single official or employee in these 15 agencies revealed the truth to the American people during the pandemic. How vast was the great COVID cover-up? Well, my investigation has recently discovered government officials from 15 federal agencies knew in 2018, this is a quote from Rand Paul, that the Wuhan Institute of Virology was trying to create a coronavirus like COVID-19. These officials knew that the Chinese lab was proposing to create a COVID-19-like virus, and not one of these officials revealed this scheme to the public. In fact, 15 agencies with knowledge of this project have continuously refused to release any information concerning this alarming and dangerous research. So keep this up. Pay attention. Whose money? Who do they work for? Me.
Me.
Government official, and you, and Kate, and Lily, and Ty, all of us who pay taxes. Government officials representing at least 15 federal agencies were briefed on a project proposed by Peter Daszak's Echo Health Alliance and the Wuhan Institute of Virology. This project, the Diffuse Project, proposed to insert a furin cleavage site into a coronavirus to create a novel chimeric virus that would have been shockingly similar to the COVID-19 virus. What does that mean? It means that at least 15 federal agencies knew from the beginning of the pandemic that Echo Health Alliance and the Wuhan Institute of Virology were seeking federal funding in 2018 to create a virus genetically very similar, if not identical, to the COVID-19 virus. So there's a copy of the report and an interview with Rand Paul. I don't know. It's 4 o'clock already, so I'm okay with not playing that interview right now. I just wanted you guys to know that, as far as I'm concerned, that's the good news. That's what continues to happen. More people are waking up, asking questions, deciding that they're not going to live inside the narrative that they keep wanting to provide to us, and that we're just not going to do it. So we're just not going to believe this crap anymore. So there is a shorter interview, Danielle, that I'm going to put in your Danielle folder.
Yeah, I would like to hear some of the interview
on Telegram.
This one is Maria. This is one. Yeah, it's in. Can I forward it to you? Yeah, it's in Telegram. It's an interview this morning with Maria Bartiromo and Rand Paul, and they cover a lot of ground. They cover some of the war, because it's something blowing up this morning on the Sunday show. But then he talks about COVID-19 misinformation is ubiquitous. 78% of the public believes or is unsure about at least one false statement, and nearly, I can't read the rest of it. Anyway, go ahead and play it, Danielle. I just put it in your folder. It's a good interview.
Okay. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
No doubt. It's really, I think, one of the most important issues we're facing. It goes well beyond COVID.
How's that audio? How's the audio?
Good.
Okay.
As Dr. Anthony Fauci, the former director of National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, this past February, on the importance of controlling the narrative as people were dying during a pandemic, leading to censorship of critical information. As the Biden administration has yet to demand answers from and hold China accountable for COVID-19 and the cover-up that followed amidst the nearly 1.2 million deaths it caused. Instead, the White House asked the CCP last week to pressure Iran not to launch an attack on Israel, which obviously did not work. Now a whistleblower is coming forward to expose what the federal government knew all along about the origins of COVID-19. Joining me right now with more in the Sunday Morning Futures exclusive is the ranking member of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, Senator Rand Paul. Senator, it's great to see you this morning, and
morning.
I want to get into the COVID situation in a moment, but first, more pressing situations this morning after the attack from Iran into Israel. Your reaction?
I think we're very fortunate that it was ineffective and that Israel's and U.S. defenses were able to stop 97% of this. But I think one question that's not being asked enough this morning is everybody's asking, what is the next step to escalation? There's another question. What are the possibilities that we could de-escalate the situation? Every action has a reaction. Hamas attacked on October 7th. Awful, dreadful. Israel kills two generals, now Iran attacks. So every action has a reaction. And is there a possibility that this could be de-escalated at this point? And I think people ought to take a breath, wait a little bit. In medicine, we're taught to check your own pulse before you check the patient's pulse. You need to calm down and think with a clear head before we move forward.
So what do you want to do in terms of moving forward in the Senate with regard to the conversation around a new supplemental package, which would send money to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan?
You know, I haven't supported foreign aid really in my tenure in the Senate, but I did support foreign aid that was paid for to Israel not too long ago. This was passed in the House, and then every Democrat in the Senate voted against foreign aid that was paid for. What I would say to Speaker Johnson is hold your ground, show some cojones, show some industrial fortitude, for goodness sakes. You've already passed aid to Israel. Tell Chuck Schumer when he's ready to take it up, and it's going to be paid for. It's a great precedent. If Speaker Johnson will stick by his guns, I have a feeling that we're going to see capitulation. There's already talk of a new one that's unpaid for. Why in the world would Republicans negotiate with themselves? Tell Chuck Schumer, bring it up. It's been sitting in the Senate for 2 months now. If they want more aid to Israel, bring it up, but we're going to have to cut somewhere else to pay for it.
I want to also ask you about what you heard from the Speaker regarding FISA. Can we trust government? Can we trust government to use FISA appropriately and legally?
No.
Absolutely not. Americans shouldn't be spied on by their own government. The Fourth Amendment was put in by our founding fathers to protect us. FISA doesn't obey the Fourth Amendment. And so Speaker Johnson was incredibly wrong. He broke the tie. He voted with the Democrats. Here we have the leader of the Republicans in the House votes with the Democrats against a warrant requirement. We also have Speaker Johnson voting for the spending package, once again, with a majority of the Democrats. As I see it now, I'm not sure there's a difference between Mike Johnson being in charge and the Democrats being in charge. The debt, the deficit this year will be $1.5 to $2 trillion, and that's Mike Johnson's bill. He put it forward. He supported it with a minority of Republicans, with a majority of Democrats. This is not using the power of the purse. This is abdicating the power of the purse.
Mm-hmm. Why? Why do you think that is?
You know, people have to be strong in their convictions. He was seen as a conservative before he came to the speakership, but now he puts a tweet out the other day saying, oh, they whispered to him about 702, how important it is, and now he's completely changed and lost all his principles on the idea that you shouldn't spy on Americans without a warrant. On the spending issue, they say, oh, government will shut down. But if the Democrats want this level of spending, we want this level, a compromise would be splitting the difference. The Democrats got everything they want in the spending, and all the hawks got what they want, too. This is a problem. On the Republican side, we have people who want unlimited military spending, and then the Democrats want unlimited welfare spending, and they get both. But Johnson hasn't held his ground. He has power. He has a majority. Use the power of the purse, Speaker Johnson. Do something to make us think you are different than the Democrats. But so far, I don't see a lot of difference.
Wow. All of this while the border is yet to be secured.
Exactly. We shouldn't, you know, look, we have 41 Republicans in the Senate. So while I blame Speaker Johnson, I blame 41 senators in the Senate. We could stop the Senate and they could do nothing without us. If 41 of us say, no, we're not passing anything until the border is secured, guess what? Democrats will wake up and secure the border. But we don't use our power effectively. We abdicate. In the Senate, the same thing happens. 10 liberal, big government Republicans vote with the Democrats, and the Democrats get what they want. But now Mike Johnson's voting with a minority of his party. He's the leader of his party, and he's not voting with the majority of the Republicans were for a warrant requirement. The majority of the Republicans were not having a deficit of $1.5 trillion, and yet he's siding with the Democrats. That's ineffective leadership. And if he wants to remain Speaker, frankly, he's going to do better because, you know, I wanted to give him a break, and I have for a couple months. This is the first time I've really spoken out. But somebody, I mean, the Speaker's got to be a Speaker. He's got to be a leader of his party, not a capitulator to the other party.
What about leadership in the Senate? Who would you like to see replace Mitch McConnell?
Anyone at this point would be better because he now has decided that Ukraine and sending our money to Ukraine that we have to borrow is more important than anything, including our border. The whole fiasco of getting that thing started with ineffective border control that we ended up rejecting in the end was all Senator McConnell's idea, and it was a disaster. It's led to Democrats now saying, oh, well, look, we offered you this great border bill,
right,
and you didn't take it. It was
right.
A crummy border bill. It was a crummy deal. We never should have done it.
Senator, real quick before you go, we've got to get into COVID as well. You are out with a report which shows that at least 15 federal agencies knew that gain-of-function research was being done in the Wuhan lab. since what, 2018?
Yeah, we know this because a whistleblower revealed it. Nobody in the administration has told us anything. We've gotten all of our information from a whistleblower, but we now know it wasn't just one agency that China was approaching. China made a presentation, or an American representative, Peter Daszak, made a representation to 15 agencies about creating a virus that, guess what, looks suspiciously like COVID-19 and looks like no other virus in nature from that family. They were working on this and presented it to 15 agencies. And in 2020, when they saw COVID-19, they should have all been calling and raising the alarm and saying, my goodness, we saw this 2 years ago. We knew the Chinese were doing this. Lo and behold, they did it. Nobody in government came forward. Not one person. I take that back. A brave Marine, a lieutenant colonel, came forward and gave us that information, or today we would still not know any of this.
And we haven't seen any holding China to account for any of this, not just the leak, but then the cover-up that followed. The Biden administration has yet to demand answers.
Yeah, the Biden administration has signed a pandemic treaty to give away all of our sovereignty so people, you know, from around the world, third world countries that run these organizations can tell us what to do, what kind of mask to wear, whether to wear goggles, earmuffs, and all the other ridiculous things that we're offered up to put surround ourselves by plexiglass, all the moronic ideas we've now farmed out. It's not bad enough to have people in the United States telling us this. They've farmed it out to an international treaty to let, you know, the rest of the world tell us how we're going to live our lives the next time something bad like this happens.
Senator, we so appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much. Senator Rand Paul joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
So that was a good interview with Maria Bartiromo. I really like her. The other information I wanted to give credit as well to the Gateway Pundit and also the Daily Mail were the ones that interviewed Rand Paul, and I can't wait for them to continue with their investigations. I, like many, many Americans, were pissed off over them passing FISA again. They're going to try to take it back out again Monday with a sort of a procedural vote. I guess somebody was out with the flu. The final vote was 222-222. And so recently a congressman retired right before this vote, and there were a lot of people that saying that he retired because he was paid off so that FISA could get passed again. We're not happy with our leadership right now.
Poor Brown.
I don't even want to call them. Yeah. And I didn't think this guy was too. I mean, I don't know why I would think that, because they all end up being freaking in the tank for the three-letter agencies. It's just really, really, really sad. I do actually have some good news, and this one I saved for last on purpose. It has nothing. I really did want to give some good news. And there was, because COVID is still being investigated. We haven't given up the fight. I love Rand Paul. I keep thinking that Trump's going to ask him to be his vice president. We'll see.
Oh,
anyway,
that,
yeah, wouldn't that, that be great?
That is
although,
some greedy chess I am here for.
Yeah, yeah. So Rand Paul would be an excellent, excellent choice for Trump. Okay, so the real good news, Supreme Court unanimously rules against exorbitant government fees. The United States Supreme Court unanimously ruled against exorbitant government fees in a case that centered on one California retiree forced to pay a flat rate $23,000 traffic impact fee for the construction of a small single home to raise his grandson in. The ruling combined earlier rulings on government permitting fees, this is the Center Square story by Kenneth Shrupp, and it was written 2 days ago. The ruling combined earlier rulings on government permitting fees, which must have both essential nexus related to the government interest from having the fee and be roughly proportional to the impact from the action the fee is targeting, with the addition that fees created by legislatures are not exempt from these requirements. I know this is a lot of gobbledygook, but here's the meat. Today's ruling is a major victory for property rights and a step in the right direction toward removing barriers to housing, said Brian Hodges, senior attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation, which served as co-counsel on the case. We are thrilled with the Supreme Court's decision and will continue fighting to protect property rights and make the process for building new homes more fair. In California, because local governments tend to exhaust their property tax revenues, who knew, on ongoing expenses, they use development fees to fund new projects, which Danielle and I are hyper aware of this here.
Absolutely.
Bless me. In California, so with a flat rate single family home development impact fees costing up to $157,000, it's possible for an impact fee to cost more than the construction of the place. Despite sky-high demand for housing and a 4.5 million home shortage in California, housing production is plummeting, with housing permits down 45% in 2023 compared to 2022 due to higher interest rates. By opening up exorbitant development fees to lawsuits, this ruling could help spur more housing construction in the long term by making it more affordable to build. California Supreme Court had ruled in favor of El Dorado County, which levied the fee on the basis that the fee was created through the legislature, not a bureaucratic action, and thus was exempt from the nexus and proportionality doctrines. The U.S. Supreme Court vacated that ruling and remanded it back to the state court to decide whether or not the $23,000 fee is constitutional under the new framework, clarifying legislator-created fees are still subject to the test. In a separate opinion, Justice Brett Kavanaugh clarified that this ruling does not address or prohibit the common government practice of imposing permit conditions, such as impact fees, on new developments through reasonable formulas or schedules that assess the impact of classes of development rather than the impact of specific parcels of property. So that's a bunch, again, of government gobbledygook. But here's what happens in California. And Katie, I don't know what state you live in, but in California, they – constantly looking for more ways to sucker the people that live here in this state, and in particular developers. Okay, so then they bitch about us not having enough houses, places where there's so many homeless in our state, but they make it impossible.
They're a voting block. We have enough homeless people
exactly.
That they could make up their own district, voting district.
They could. They make it impossible to build new homes, or it's not necessarily impossible. You just have to pay an exorbitant fee. So this poor man in El Dorado County wanted to build a home on his property, and they said you have to pay for traffic mitigation, $23,000. Who knows, what even that freaking means. Other than they want us out of our cars, and so which is in a weird way doesn't make a bit of sense, but whatever. So the Supreme Court said, California, you've got to knock that crap off. Okay. That's why we just had one of the largest insurance companies leave the state because of what it actually costs to rebuild a home in California that gets, and it's not the construction. It's the fees that have to be paid, permitting and all this other stuff and, traffic impact and blah, blah, shit. So that's why they said that's it. We're not insuring homes in California anymore. We're leaving the state. And other insurance companies will follow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have to say that I believe that the developers, the actual developers, aren't really the ones that are suffering. It's single home owners that get treated like developers that are the ones that are suffering for this, because the developers can pay for it.
Well, of course. No, they don't pay for it. They pass that cost on to the people trying to buy the home.
Precisely.
And
right.
And so if you add $157,000 to an exorbitantly priced home, you're going to price out most of the people. They won't be able to afford, they won't be able to qualify for a loan for that. So think about that. The cost of the fees is what it would normally cost to buy a home anywhere else in the entire United States. And you, so you would have to be making about $1 million a year to qualify for a loan in this state, which is just not possible. They're pricing everyone out, and just with these stupid fees right off the top. So you think
what
your home costs $850. They're junk fees. I'll tell you right
is
now.
It,
hold on.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's like the green, like. Like certain provisions that are supposed to be green or climate.
Yes.
Helpful.
So there's that. Yes. There's those fees. I closed the article because I was done reading
sorry.
It. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. No, it's okay. For the gentleman, it was a traffic impact fee. Okay. On top of all those, all the other fees, right? There's the when you turn in the plans, they charge you a fee. When you, and keep in mind, the developers aren't paying those fees. They're adding them to the price of the home. And yes, there are, you know, you have to be green, energy efficient. It has to be this. It has to be that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I was wondering, because have you heard of the Marshall Fire in Boulder, Colorado?
I did hear about it. I know it caused a lot of damage.
A lot of people lost their homes, and they could not afford to rebuild because of the new provisions, I believe.
Yes.
With
yeah, that's exactly
building.
It. That's exactly. So that's what I was talking about when I said that Allstate? Allstate left the state.
Allstate.
Because when a house burns down, they've insured the home, okay? House burns down, and it costs like 5 or 6 times what, you know, it's insured for because of all of those stupid junk fees that they charge. Hold on a second. I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's what I was
wondering. I wonder if that's going on in, you know, that's one of the reasons that Lahaina has not been rebuilt yet. And what do all
very
of them have in common? They're all Democrat states.
Yep.
Yeah. A lot of things suspicious about those fires, for sure.
No question mm-hmm. about it.
So,
okay,
yeah.
You guys, I want you to have a great week. Okay, so I do actually have one more thing that I want to add. And I tried to do a Facebook Live, and it was probably – I didn't have great service. But the feed shoot was installed today, and it is a thing of beauty and amazingness. Okay, so I live on a tiered property, and we had to tier it because the entire hillside slipped about 30 years ago. And so Danielle and I have built over the years, we have added wall after wall after tier to make the entire third of an acre usable space, right? And so, but we were trying to do some of that stuff, and we were trying to slide stuff down to the, you know, construction materials down to the bottom of the hill, right? So that these blocks that we are using to build these walls. And we were building these, trying to build ramps or things so that we could slide these blocks down. And we decided that Lafayette Court doesn't follow the rules of gravity because we could not get stuff to slide down to save our lives. We tried so many different ways to slide things down the hill so that we could create these walls from the bottom up and, you know, take back our space, right? And we eventually did it, but the big joke was gravity doesn't exist on Lafayette Court. So when I told Danielle that we were going to build a feed chute and shoot this pipe and then pour the feed in and have it dump into a bucket down the hill, she laughed at me because of our gravity issue. And,
uh-huh.
and I don't know, it's really not possible that gravity doesn't exist at Lafayette Court, but it really doesn't. So we tested it today. It worked like a champ. I couldn't make him understand, even though I am perfectly 100% fluent in Spanish that he's taller than me and that I need to not lift that 50-pound bag feet above my head. But he goes, no, it's fine. I'm like, you're taller than me. Anyway, did work, even though my Facebook Live feed did not. But so I'm hoping to actually get some video so that I can share it with you guys of the feed, the gravity actually being present at Lafayette Court. Anyway, that's my good news because you ought to see
me
trying to carry 50-pound
bags of chicken feed down the hill. Not fun.
It's not.
And
it's not. And we, it hasn't been pleasant. And we sort of roll them down, which gravity actually works for that too. But still, it's just too much. So now we get to stand at the top of the hill and pour the feed down. And so that's my good news.
Yay.
I want you guys to have a wonderful week. Be safe. Be well. And I will see you again next week. Okay?
All right.
Love
you,
Carla.
We love you. You're welcome. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay. And Ty is with us now. Hi, Ty.
I know. Right at the wrong time, darling. I just right when she left, I didn't hear any of it, so I feel bad. But
no,
here.
No, it's fine. We just got done with a good news report / it wasn't a good news report. So yeah, there's that.
I have to say that every time I hear Danielle's voice, I feel very soothed and calm. So that makes me very excited. Happy birthday to you, darling.
Oh, thank you. 29 for the 13th time, I think.
Oh, yes.
I hear you back there. I hear whoever that is. I hear that. Little poppies. I know you guys saw that cast I did, but I was just like, I was in a mood where I was just like, thank God for Aries, because people were just blasting what they needed to say, and it's that time frame. The moon is in Gemini, and so everything is about conversation. Gemini represents conversation. So for the past 3 days, it's all been, let's have that talk, you know? So.
Totally. If you guys are okay with it, I would like to play some clips from that Rabbi Barclay conversation.
Ooh.
With Candace Owens. Are you guys okay?
Yes, please.
A little might be a little bit of rage here because I wanted to throw things at the TV, but
for sure.
But
rage is good.
Are
for
you guys good with that? Everybody good?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I've got it queued up here. Oh, there we go. And let me know about the audio. I'll pause it in a second to check audio.
On such short notice, Rabbi Michael Barclay, welcome to the show.
Okay, is that good, guys?
Yep.
Good.
Awesome. Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Candace. And Candace, I really want to tell you, I've written certain things, and it gives me great optimism. They were gracious and reached out yesterday, and I wanted to get together. Actually makes me very optimistic.
Yes, so I am the ultimate defender of free speech, and I believe that we need more speech, not less of it. When we see things and we believe them not to be true, rather than censoring that individual, we should actually give that person a platform, because people will walk away and be able to assess whether or not the statements they heard was true.
Hear, hear, right? I mean, we're all in favor of that. We're all down for that, right? Like, let's
hope
platform
so.
People. Mm-hmm.
I would hope so. No.
Yep. Okay. Here we go.
And so just to give a little bit of background to people listening to this, you appeared on Charlie Kirk's show, and you referred to me as anti-Semitic. Is that correct? Okay.
Not only that, Candace, I've actually written a couple of articles, one in November and one last week, about your anti-Semitism. Yeah.
Correct. And referring to that article that you wrote last week, published on March 9th, the heading reads, "Let's be honest, Candace Owens is a Jew-hating bigot." So that's very punchy, very strong language. And I want to actually go through this article point by point so that you can defend your position and say why you wrote this.
Candace, I think before that, and as I said, I'm very optimistic that you would have dialogue about something. I think before that, there are some real steps, which is, I have called you, and I'm not alone in this. Many Jews have called you an anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm.
I also talk to people who say you have a really sweet heart, just so you know. You and I have a number of mutual friends in the world. But I think it's important to first identify what anti-Semitism is. It is a different type of hate than any other type of hate in the world.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's. I'm gonna let him get to this.
The moment you said it, I was like, "Here, Daniel's gonna be like, okay, first of all."
Okay. So rabbis are historically, rabbis have also been, you know, counselors, right? They're leaders of the Jewish faith, but they're also counselors. So, him coming into this and saying, "Oh, you know, some hate you and some love you. Yeah, you're a Jew-hating bigot, but some people love you." Right, that all
you're
like
a sweetheart.
It's not a
denial of his statement at all. See, it's not that he denied that he said it. He just said that I understand that some people like you. So I'm like, that's a very good deflection. That was interesting.
Right.
So
yeah, some people like you, so that's why I'm doing this show. All right, here we go.
And you and I are speaking crossways because we have a different understanding and definition.
Yeah.
That's not going to lead to any dialogue. That's not going to lead. Look, I said to Scott, I'd love to walk out of here and say, you know what, I was wrong, and write an article, I apologize, and I was wrong. But the first piece is to have a mutual understanding of what is anti-Semitism. I think that would help a tremendous amount.
Yeah, I actually,
for sure. Let's hash this out.
I totally agree with you on that. That is a perfect place to start. Could you provide for us a definition of anti-Semitism?
Absolutely. I really appreciate that, because I think that is the break. If we're not speaking the same language, where can we go, right? So there's a man, a blessed memory man named Lord Jonathan.
Okay, first of all, can we talk about the prefix anti and the suffix Semite? Like, we can all look those words up, those, you know, and know that it is not what he's about to say it is. But, mm-hmm. All right, here we go.
Facts, he was the chief rabbi of England. He had a great line. He really defined anti-Semitism, that anti-Semitism is Jews have no right to exist collectively as Jews with the same rights as other human beings. It's kind of a weird statement, so let's just track back to understand the history of anti-Semitism. 2,000 years ago, Jews don't exist.
Specifically, that is not the definition of anti.
This clarification, is he Orthodox, or what kind of denomination is he specifically? Do we know?
I don't know. Maybe somebody can fill me in here.
By the way that he talks to her, I can tell that he's at least somewhat Orthodox, because he's very condescending. Just throwing that out there. I've dated an Orthodox Jew. This is a weird thing to say, but I have. So I understand. Anyway, keep going.
What is
the
full name again? Danielle,
it's Rabbi Barclay. B-A-R-C-L-A-Y. Barclay.
Okay.
Like, just listen to the mannerisms and the way he speaks to her. He's very he's very condescending. He's already dismissed her as a woman already as it is. So it's just interesting. But you know.
Rabbi Barclay is an American rabbi, author, and lecturer, the founding rabbi of Temple Ner Simcha in Westlake Village, California. He is recognized as an insightful theologian who integrates authentic Jewish theology into 21st century situations. Well, guess what? I'm reading his own website, so of course it makes him sound great. The descendant of Ukrainian rabbis from Chernigov, Rabbi Barclay, was both the Hillel director in the School of Theological Studies at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles.
The way to tell them, by the way, because I've dated them. So the way to tell them, if they have the yarmulke with the curls, the curled sideburns, those are Orthodox.
No curls.
Oh, he's Hasidic. He's Hasidic Jew.
Not Hasidic. Like the curls are Hasidic.
Yes. They're like, so he must be the opposite. He's the opposite of that. Okay. I wasn't sure.
Rabbi Barclay was also the recipient of the 2010 B'nai Zion Distinguished Humanitarian Award. So
that's
I don't know.
Weird. What a weird thing. Okay. All right. We're learning more about him as we go. So.
Can we just for good measure, can we look up the prefix anti?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe some people out there don't know what.
Let's just break it down. Make it first grade level.
We haven't used anti right in years, I don't think, right? We use it for everything. Anti-vax, anti-this, anti-trans. It's just everything's anti, 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 anti. We should look it up, though,
opposed
huh? Not like we're going to use it correctly, but.
Opposed to, against, opposed. More definitions.
Okay.
Let's see.
Now, No, that's fine. That's great.
Antibacterial, anticoagulant, antigymnastic.
For sure.
Antithesis. Antithesis.
Or Semitic. Yeah. How about Semite?
Yeah, right. That includes Arab, so.
Right. So can somebody please look that up for me? I've got my, get out of this.
Here it is. Gotcha. A member of any of the people who spoke or speak a Semitic language, including in particular the Jews and Arabs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now can somebody please look up the term? Can somebody please look up the term anti-Semitic?
There's like the sources are Wikipedia, U.S. Department
of
State.
Yep, mainstream. Please do it.
Merriam-Webster. I just want to start with Merriam-Webster because it's so like basic. Relating to or characterized by anti-Semitism, feeling or showing hostility towards or discrimination against Jews as a cultural, racial, or ethnic group. Okay, so this is such a conundrum, right?
But not Arabs, right? Just even though Semites,
yeah,
are interesting.
You can hate Arabs. Stop being anti-Semitic.
Because they deserve it.
Right.
They're just annoying with those jabs.
You see why this is happening right now in your sphere, Danielle. This is why. Because Aries are going to say it. They're going to say it right to your face. Like, there's no filter. Iran's going right for it. Like, everybody's just doing it. They're just going to say it right to you. You're like, wow, really? Are we really doing this right now? This is crazy.
Even my mom was against the bombings, right? Like, understood that the bombings were both, you know, like from...
Insanity.
All right. Let's get back to this a little bit. He's going to go into a little bit of a tirade, and we're going to maybe fast forward a little bit. But, the same way that Putin and Tucker did in their interview. But, you know, just go with it for a second. So 3, 2, 1.
Do you want me to read a tiny bit more about anti-Semitism from Wikipedia just to get the kind of
Yeah, that'd be good.
Party line.
Info
so
is always good.
Anti-Semitism. Yeah, Wikipedia, since it's like controlled information, right? Hostility to, prejudice towards, or discrimination against Jews. This sentiment is a form of racism, and a person who harbors it is called an anti-Semite. Primarily, anti-Semitic tendencies may be motivated by negative sentiment towards Jews as a people or by negative sentiment towards Jews with regard to Judaism. In the former case, usually represented as racial anti-Semitism, a person's hostility is driven by the belief that Jews constitute a distinct race, even though that's questionable, with inherent traits or characteristics that are repulsive or inferior to the preferred traits within that person's society. In the latter case, known as religious anti-Semitism, a person's hostility is driven by their religion's perception of Jews and Judaism, typically encompassing doctrine of supersession that expect or demand Jews to turn away from Judaism and submit to the religion presenting itself. It's just amazing because all of this, anyway, I think that Merriam-Webster actually was more succinct. Just leave that
Semitic.
Semitism includes Arabs and Jews, but every definition of anti-Semitism is only about
Jews.
Jews
weird.
And Judaism.
Very weird.
That is truly impressive.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It gets
very interesting.
Let's continue with this.
Yep.
3, 2, 1.
Yes, thank you.
Do not have faith. As the early Christians, as some of them have faith, some of them accept Jesus, but they don't really in their heart. And you and I know both know people like Rob McCoy who accepts it fully in their heart. But other people who are doing it without faith, and they're those who have less faith. The fact that a Jew exists, let alone thrives, is a threat to their faith. Because how can the Jew not accept Jesus as God and still thrive? Unless he's associated with the devil. So you start having these myths that are created of the Jew being identified with the opposite of God. This really codifies in 1144 in Norwich, England, what's called the bloodline. This is really important to understand, especially today in 2024. At 11:44, a young boy is killed, and the local priest says that's because the Jews need to make their matzah with Christian blood. It's called the bloodline. When the problems of other people on the Jew. Just so you know.
I wish I could show you Candace's face. Because
I wish you could too.
She's trying to contain it, I imagine.
Yeah, I'm gonna share this in our group chat because everybody needs to see it.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, because like, what is this? This is not. We're just talking about the definition of anti-Semitic, and that's completely leaving out Arab. The Arab part of this. Just mm-hmm. so you guys can see it, but there I just shared it. Let's continue.
It's so ridiculous, not only just on its face, but we're forbidden from even having meat that has any blood in it. This is a Torah law. You can't have, that's why, you know, we can't have steak tartare. Okay? So this gets
I'm having trouble hearing this.
In combination with...
You're having trouble hearing him?
A little bit, yeah.
Mm,
okay. He's got a harsh baritone voice, so it's kind of echoing a bit. But
what if I turned it down a little bit, the volume?
That might help. That might, yeah. His voice is just very deep, so it kind of echoes a bit.
I'm sorry. Did you say 11 and 11:40? This happened.
11:44 in Norwich, England.
Okay.
This is after in the 4th century. You have something called the Vulgate. The Vulgate is the official translation of the Bible. In Hebrew, there's no vowels, and the person who translates the Vulgate knows what he's doing is translating law. He puts down that when Moses comes down from Mount Sinai, he has horns, okay, Karen, when actually the word was Karan, meaning that light shone from his head. So now by 11:44, you have the anti-Semitic myth of Jews have horns and they drink blood. And I know people who've been asked when they went into the army and other places, can I see your horns? So this still exists today.
I mean, I'm having a really hard time believing any of this. I don't know about you guys, but, like, he's trying to prove it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's complicated. It's very, very complicated. I mean, I've been talking to a lot of African translators, too, and they were like, the number one thing if you're translating the Bible to other languages, especially if you do translations like this, is that you never translate people's names. And so the fact that they changed, you know, J does not exist in the Hebrew alphabet. So this is like, I mean, there's a lot of things we could dive into, but I feel like he's trying to overwhelm her. It's what I feel like he's trying to do. That's just my personal opinion.
Okay. Yeah,
darling. It's a lot. That whole argument of like the translation of things is very difficult. But I'm like, that has nothing to do with the actual definition of the thing that he claims that she says
right.
She is, but she's not really doing that.
She's
calling on
like
a section of the extremist of his religion.
Like it sounds like Lily wants to jump in, and I feel like her voice is not heard.
Lily,
enough,
I was going to ask where Lily was. So Lily's here. She better be here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was just making a stupid joke that I could really see the Khazars like having horns back in the day, though.
Oh my God.
Oh,
all right.
I had to do it.
I fast
good
forwarded.
Entry. That's a good entrance there.
I think it's really interesting. What grabbed me was when he said a little bit earlier how because. He just basically said Christians think Israelites or whatever you call Jews, I guess is the proper word, not the biblical word, that they're satanic because they don't have Jesus. But how about we judge that through actions, buddy? You think maybe we think they're satanic because of actions, because of behavior, because of their absolute lack of mercy and kindness?
Yeah, the tribes of Judea. He forgets that a lot of us understand what the tribe, by the way, tribe is means three, three. So there's three different sects. That's what tri means.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you hear the word triangle, that's tribes. So there's different things that are, he thinks they're a monolith and they're not. Maybe some agree with him. Maybe some thought he was evil. Maybe some thought that, I mean, he's counting on our ignorance of it, I think is what it is. That's just my own personal take. But
oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. I mean, I just had a conversation with grown-ass adults about the prefix and suffix of anti-Semitic.
I
had the same conversation with my children, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of shit going on that, that adults don't understand. I fast-forwarded this just a little bit because he gets into the slogan form of his definition here in a second. So 3, 2, 1.
They are in culture. They are in arts. They're in science. It's no longer against them for their religion. It's against them for their race. This anti-Semitism is the oldest hate in the world and the hate that mutates.
Sorry.
In 1948, because remember, it says Lord Sachs.
Oh, I just want to pause it. You said it's a hate that mutates.
Correct.
So your belief then is that the definition of anti-Semitism can necessarily, is that correct?
It's not just my belief. It is the commonly accepted understanding in both the Jewish and academic worlds.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to pause it there.
That is a ridiculous statement. That is the most ridiculous statement ever. Jewish hate is the oldest hate? Jewish hate is? It's older than the Sumerian texts? How dare you? How dare you?
They just think whatever they can sell it to us. They can just sell us an idea, a story.
That is an obscene statement. That's obscene.
It's laughable.
Wow. I see where you're starting to throw shit at the TV now. I'm like, I would have thrown shit at the television. Like, how dare you? How fucking dare you? That is so obscene. Oh, my God.
History.
No, there was no colorism. There was no. It was Jews, right? That was the first time anything ever happened. Then people had hate. Then the first time that ever, the arrogance, the absolute arrogance of some people.
What?
This is why you wanted to look up the term. Is that why you wanted to look up the term, Danielle? Is that why? Because nonsense. That's nonsense.
Is there any more to listen to, or was that it, Danielle?
No. Oh, no. We're not going to get through the whole thing because it's an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh,
and we don't want to rage quit on this fucking on this channel. We're not trying to rage quit here because I'm just going to be like, oh, my God, the nerve. I feel like it's just going to get worse as he talks is what I feel like. But
we don't want to hire anybody's blood pressure too much.
Yeah, right.
We might
have
sensitive
exactly.
listeners.
Yeah, we're going to try to get your hands rolled up in this.
We're going to do a little bit more. Oh, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Okay. As I said, that's why I quoted. This is a quote. It's a great thing from Lord Sachs, Jonathan Sachs. It's a great thing from Nialeka. This is just accepted. The understanding of, a cultural anthropologist.
I would just say off the bat, I do not accept that definitions can just mutate. That is
boom. Love some Candace, right? Come on.
For her.
I've always loved Candace. Yeah. I've always loved her for that reason. So
I could debate that on the definition of a woman. I mean, and I'm saying not just about Jewish people. I think that we have to have a concrete definition to work with because then you can just update and say, actually, I've changed that, and now this is what constitutes anti-Semitism.
But Candace, that is the horror of anti-Semitism.
Ugh.
So what you are saying to me is that anti-Semitism is this and does not change. What I am saying to you is that the entire world and scholars about anti-Semitism recognize that it is a unique hate. That if you define it as that Jews should not be able to exist collectively.
Who said that?
Right.
How about
right.
they can exist,
that
but
part,
also let
that
other
part.
People exist too.
That part.
And you exist and you can let others exist?
0 to 100 real quick. No, she said no Jews can exist. Did she say that? Did she say that? You hyperbolic.
Never.
So reactionary.
3, 2, 1.
Okay, as a collective, they just shouldn't have that right. That changes from the Middle Ages with religion, the 18th through 20th centuries about race, and then after Israel is created, it's a hatred based on the nation. And until that is understood, that it is, this isn't something that's really questioned about among academics theologians, Jewish scholars. I'm not presenting it. This is why I thought I'm so optimistic about a dialogue. But I think part of it is you view that the hate can't mutate. And what I'm trying to tell you is that we have 2,000 years of history that demonstrates the exact opposite.
So, and I'm going to just push back just gently here.
Gently.
For me personally, if I thought that racism could just be an ever-shifting definition based on the experience of Black people, it would be a remarkable power, and I would be able to create something like BLM, which could say that everything was racist. So I am not going to be able to agree that definition should be able.
Thoughts, comments?
Indeed. As someone who's her skin tone, yeah, he was trying to – see, that would normally work against people against of his same skin tone. No, we know what you're doing. You're trying to use it as a bludgeon against other people. It doesn't work that way. There are villains in your own thing, and you're pretending like they're not. You're just pretending they're not there. They are there. Now, whether or not he wants to take it as a personal reflection of his religion is not our problem. They are there factually. That's it. That's the reality of the situation. He just won't acknowledge it because he's attached himself to an ideology, so he doesn't want to be wrong in that. He doesn't want to self-critique. There it is.
Yep. All right, here we go.
Let's just able to transform.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kate, you want to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say it's so weird how he could just be so bold and start out the whole conversation saying a lot of people think you're an anti-Semite and then introduce the idea of anti-Semite as you don't want that race to exist. When
right.
The frick did Candace ever say that? Never. Never in a million years.
Of course
years.
You would. Of course you would if you're a rabbi who doesn't respect women. Anyway. Yeah, I said
for sure. And maybe this isn't clear, but I think one of the reasons that Candace has this rabbi on the show is because he wrote a completely, a defamation lawsuit article, basically, about her saying all of
okay.
this. And she'll go through it, and we're not going to go through the whole thing, but she wants to go through the whole article that he wrote specifically about her, claiming
mm-hmm.
that she's a bigot and an anti-Semite. And
yep.
yeah, so that's basically the whole premise of this.
Which you notice he hasn't answered any question directly. He hasn't answered any of the direct questions.
Nope.
He just kind of goes into his spiel, and that's what he does.
Yep.
That's how rabbis work. So, you know.
Here she went.
God.
According to what's happening during the day. But here's what I will say. If you could, just because I think it's really important for us to get to going through this article, because then you might be able to explain why you view it as anti-Semitism. If you could just give us what you are saying the current definition of anti-Semitism is today, that would be very helpful.
The current definition of anti-Semitism today has to do with what feelings are. It has to do with anti-Zionism, number one. That is the definition. Anti-Zionism, anti-Israel is anti-Semitism.
Okay.
Okay.
This isn't
so you believe that Bold. Jewish people
Bold.
Can be anti-Semitic?
Absolutely.
Okay. So when you see a gathering of Jewish people who say, you know, I'm Jewish, but I don't support Israel or Bibi Netanyahu, you say that person's that person can be anti-Semitic.
You just did two different things and was very
okay.
You just did two different things that were totally unrelated.
Yep. And he's going to do it. Let's just continue a little bit.
Support Israel.
Yeah.
And the
Take
Jews
notes.
That do not support Bibi Netanyahu.
I'm just saying that because he's the current prime minister. So I'm saying like if they say
no,
I don't support.
This is where you're missing the point. So
okay.
I'm going to
okay.
go.
Educate.
I'm going to go under the premise that you care about people. You and I don't know each other, but I'm going to go under that premise. I'm going to go under the premise that you have no desire to ever hurt anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's the premise I'm coming
How
into this
generous.
Dialogue with.
Yeah, right?
You have been devastatingly hurtful. And I think that I'm going to go from there. You don't understand what it means to the Jewish world.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great teaching that comes out of every sociologist, every person in academics, is that I don't get to tell a Black man if he's experiencing racism.
Mm-hmm.
He knows. I don't get to tell you if you're experiencing misogyny. you know, if I make a comment and it's misogynistic, and you say, Rabbi, you know, that was really misogynistic, my job is to say, wow, I didn't mean that. I apologize. That's not what I meant. And you do not get the right to say what is anti-Semitic or Jew hatred.
I'm not trying to I don't think I said anything about me having the right. I just said to you, would you then view, because I did host somebody who is Jewish, Dave Smith, on my show. I'm sure you're familiar with him. He's a comedian, he's a libertarian. He is not pro-Zionist. So I'm just asking you for clarity, because you're saying that you can't dismiss a Jewish person, but aren't you thereby dismissing Jewish people who say that I don't support Israel as a state? I'm just trying to have you answer that question.
And the answer is, I will ask you back the same question. Mm-hmm. Are there blacks who do not support blacks? Are there pick the cause for the minority who do not support or not, or actually are even better? You and I both sit on the conservative side politically. We share that, right? And we face the same way when it comes to that. And we both, I think, are disappointed in those who are Republicans in name only, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Does that mean they're not Republicans?
Well, I wouldn't describe a race as a political ideology, like a political
party.
There
it is. Non sequitur. There it is.
Like, you're not black if you don't support this. It's different. Then, like, you're basically saying that a Jewish person can't be anti-Semitic. So that would be like saying a black person can, in fact, be racist towards, or they're not black.
Look, I'm not going to comment on black community.
Except he just did. Come on. Didn't he just do that?
He totally did.
No. The fact that he conflated is the first one. First of all, let's clarify. Let's clarify something. Are there black Jewish people? Then be quiet. Jew is not a race.
There you go.
It is a religion.
Exactly. You can
so therefore, that's not the same thing, even remotely. That's called a non sequitur. That's what that's called. He's trying. You see what he's trying to do? You see what he's trying
yep.
to do? That's not going to happen. That's not going to fly. That's not going to fucking
yep.
fly. Sorry about you. So, rabbis, they're a problem.
There we go, Lily. I was going to ask if anybody had anything else to say before we started up again. For sure, Lily. What's up?
So,
I think that was me. I was just commenting on the fact that he said a black man knows if he's being discriminated against or a woman. Like, he's talking to, put it politically correctly, a person of color, a black woman. Like,
mm-hmm.
why does he have to say a black man knows? Like, just erasing her, just kind of, like, subtly dismissing her reality. Whereas
exactly.
He
and also ours. He's speaking for
moment.
Me as if I feel persecuted. Do I act like I sound like I'm persecuted or oppressed? Interesting, huh? That's interesting.
Yep.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
I will say there are plenty of self-hating Jews.
Okay, so
you do believe
and self-hating women.
There it is. There's
black
the admission.
People. There we go. All right, sorry.
Trying to get you to say is that Jewish people who don't support Israel, you are saying they are anti-Semitic. I just want to understand that.
I'm saying it very clearly. They are self-hating Jews. Let's use that term very specifically. You need to understand why they are self-hating Jews. And you need to understand, as numerous people have talked about, I've written about, Frager's talked about, Gorka's talked about, Levin's talked about, the number of people have talked about, Shapiro's talked about, as I say, I've written about, is that people want to assimilate. For 2,000 years, Jews have been persecuted, and so they want to assimilate, and so many have converted from Judaism not to another religion, but to leftist politics. That becomes their religion. And they lose their identity. That's reality.
Yeah, right.
So you need to understand, right? I shouldn't say you need to. That's not fair, and I apologize. I would hope that you understand a history and an understanding that we define what anti-Semitism is. And what happened on October 7th.
Okay. Was he going to say October 7th?
Mm-hmm. And I wrote an article about you in November. I don't know if you read it or not. I was told you had, but I don't know if you did or not.
I did not.
Okay. I wish you had. And I really wish you had. Because we might be in a very different place. You went on Tucker Carlson. After all, this is November.
Okay, go ahead. I'm going to say I want to talk about that. You put that in this article, which was published just last week.
So I wrote a very specific article, and you can find it right now. And it was an impersonal invitation to you and for you that despite everything else I had read or seen or heard, that my belief and my hope is that your comment of wanting to have an academic discussion about October 7th came from a place of not really realizing what October 7th was. October 7th is unique in recorded human history as the ugliest day of humanity.
October 7th? Oh my God.
Sorry, keep going.
It's just best if we do.
This is amazing.
Isn't it amazing? You're just like, wow, honey.
It's like a whole other level of making stuff up.
The arrogance. Just the arrogance, darling. The arrogance.
I thought January
sweetheart,
6th
darling.
Was a birthday.
Right, exactly.
I thought January 6th was the worst day of humanity.
Well, right. Exactly.
You know what he's mad about? Because he forgets we realize that we've published and know that the reality of the protocols of Zion were real. We published them. They've never denied that those are true. They just don't like it. Oh, no, you did say it. You did say it factually. So the fact that we're against Zionism, why is that a problem? Why would it be a problem? You mean when they say they would be indispensable with the poisons and be good? No, we read it. We read it, honey. We read it. That's from you. That's where it came from.
What was
so,
the protocols of
you can be mad about it all day long, but the fact of the matter is it's true. You never disprove silent weapons for quiet wars or the protocols of Zion. You just don't like them. You don't want the populace to know what they are. Okay.
Okay.
We'll go back to that. I'm putting a pin in it.
Please do. Please take notes. This is such trash, you guys. I'm sorry that I even have to play this, but
no,
we have to.
Me and Danielle watching C-SPAN. We just watch hours and hours of this nonsensical. You hear what they say. You sit there and tolerate them saying the most ludicrous and obscene garbage, and just be like, okay, we'll see about that.
Okay.
We'll see about it. We're gonna test you on it. So
all right. Let's get continue before I throw up, okay?
Yeah, you might want to take a break and throw up. It's bad. And of course, we're only, what is this? We are 16 minutes into a nearly two-hour interview, and we're not going to continue.
It's like a two-hour thing. Oh, my God.
It gets worse. And she got fired after this.
Yep.
But, all right, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Yep.
Taking her phone. To videotape her being raped on the corpse of her dead boyfriend and then shot on it and sending that video to her parents.
Raped on the corpse of her dead boyfriend and then sending the video to her parents. This is what
Hasn't
Israel wants us to
debunked?
Believe happened.
Didn't that get debunked? Sorry to step on your words, but didn't that get debunked?
Well, I mean, would
hyperbolic,
you, if you were interviewing
like ripping
this
babies out of
person,
incubators, kind
of, if you were interviewing this
well,
person,
well, yeah, the baby
would,
incubators thing
that?
Did, yeah, for sure.
All right, I'm sorry. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Okay.
Beheading a man with a garden hoe, kicking a woman until her body parts fall off, is unique in terms of the intention to attack civilians.
Is it really?
And so in November, after you made the comments on Tucker Carlson, about wanting an academic discussion about how, you know, those kind of comments that you made and the ennui that you demonstrate. I wrote an article saying that I would arrange for you, there's a film, a 47-minute film by the IDF. It is based...
From the IDF?
Okay, so propaganda film? Thanks. Let's watch that.
It's all the footage done by the Hamas terrorists of what they were doing so proudly, what they wanted to do. And that my belief was, I don't think that you quite realize that, and I would arrange for a private screening for you and your friend.
Mm-hmm.
That I would arrange that and then have the discussion about how you feel about October 7th.
Okay, so I just really would like to get to your article because I think it's important. I want to acknowledge your pain about October 7th.
That's not an opinion.
No, I didn't say opinion. I said I want to acknowledge your pain about October
7th. I apologize.
Yeah, you're not listening to her. You're not listening to her. You're not listening to her. That's all there is to it. That's all there is to it. He's given up on her.
I do have a
And she did acknowledge early in the interview that there might be some mic problems, you know, because this is a last minute setup. Maybe he couldn't hear. I mean, obviously we've even said, oh, well, he's hard to understand, right? Like we can't understand him.
Yeah.
And I had turned down, you know, so let's at least give that kind of leeway.
Leniency, for sure.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
And we're going to be able to watch it. I definitely did not say I wanted to have an academic debate about October 7th. That's not what I said at all. But I have the clip. And I do also want, I think it's best for us to dive into what you actually wrote about me because there are several mischaracterizations, I believe, of what I said, but both of us are going to be able to watch it. So again, this is the article. And by the way, you did say in this article that you heard that I received your invitation. That is false. I think it's important to just maybe name the people who told you that I received your invitation.
No, I'd rather not do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Since you're saying that it's incorrect, and then I apologize.
No, you can apologize. I just think that a lot of the reason that things happen is...
What's that?
He keeps apologizing. He said it at least 3 to 5 times, and it's always pandering. Like, he just... It's all posturing. It's all fake.
You notice how she's very calm and very, very reserved, and just being like, "No, here's what I actually said. It's not what I said." Very calm the whole time. She's the patience of a saint, darling. I don't know how she's doing it.
Yes, exactly. Right. And that's the thing is that he's written these scornful articles about her. And you won't even, based on false information. Let's go back. Is she a lawyer? I don't even know if she's a. She's not a lawyer.
She's not a lawyer.
But she's like laser focused on the truth. You know, in this article, somebody
about her that he's written about her, and he's dodging the questions with his like knowledge of whatever the fuck the Jew culture he thinks he knows. I'm like, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about your accusations against me. That's what we're talking about.
Right.
And he can't defend it. That's what it is.
Right. And she's like, somebody said that I read the article and I didn't. So please tell me who you are hearing from. No, I won't.
You're lying because you're a liar. Yeah, mm-hmm. There it is. Admit
God.
It. They have to admit it. They have to show you on camera that they're frauds. Yeah. Okay. Keep going.
Yep.
Embarrass yourself on a public platform. Please do this.
Yep.
Please continue to
go.
Do this.
Three,
it's so shameful.
Because there is this sort of back channeling and discussion, and nobody told me that I got an invitation, and now you've written that I refused an invitation, and so that adds to people believing.
So, Candace, I'm going to ask you a question right now. I'm inviting you, forget about the article, because I have no issue with
about
the Buzz Writer article thing. I was wrong. Candace Owens does not feel that way. I would love that. So I'm inviting you right now. I will set up a screening for you. Will you come?
If you set up a screening for me after we go through this, I want to also be able to estimate your character by going through some of the things that you wrote. You did write some things that I believe...
Wait. I'm asking a yes or no question.
No. I just said to you, I'm going to give you an answer to that, but I want to first go through your article because I want to be able to estimate.
Wait, I'm asking you a question. I will take the entire article.
I'm not saying I'm not going to answer your question.
Mad.
I am just saying I would like to go through this. See how you feel.
Why is he mad? Why are you mad? Why are you mad?
Okay, sure. If you want to set it up for me to have a screening of that here without you there, that's fine. What I'm saying is that based on what you wrote about me, I wouldn't take an invitation from you anywhere. I think that's fair, given what's in this article. I think that's a normal human response that if somebody has written somebody something that is utterly libelous about you. It mischaracterizes what you said.
But if you want to set it up separately
and you want to send it to the Daily Wire and you want us to have a private screening, I absolutely will watch the events of October 7th.
God bless you. And had I never heard you say that, I wouldn't have written an article.
Well, I think you still would have, but you made a lot of points in here.
No, I wouldn't have. No, I wouldn't have. Because
you
I
wouldn't have.
Go ahead.
He wouldn't have written the article if what? Did somebody hear what he says?
I couldn't understand. If he would have, if she would have agreed IDF viewing of what happened on October 7th, he never would have written the article. So if she would have agreed to a propaganda film viewing, then none of it
If she would have conformed to him, if she would have conformed to him, then he would be able to do it. That's what it is. That's what it is.
Yep.
He wants her to conform. That's what he wants.
And I think he was saying that she got an invite and she says she didn't. That was part of that?
Yes.
Anyway, okay, perfect.
Correct.
He's just making stuff up.
3, 2, 1.
I
feel like the audio kind of is not great. So should I turn it up a little bit or?
I would say turn it down a little bit before.
Okay.
No. It was fine before, but now that she's contested and now he's screaming, so now you have to turn it down. Men, anyway.
For sure.
We have a constant question. No, actually, honestly, had you said there, at any point, what you just now said to me that you would watch a screening, I don't need to be there, but you would watch a screening, if I set it up, I would not have been there.
Okay. Mm. Well, I just don't want to go through these points, though, because you...
Okay, but if you hear that, please.
Yes, I hear that, and thank you for saying that.
Great.
But a lot of what you wrote in this article is a lot of what I'm assuming you have a friendly relationship with Rabbi Shmuley has been saying about me. So it's really important to go through these points, because when you write something is a Jew-hating bigot, that's very strong language, and we need to go through these points. So
we'll go through all of them, sure.
Yes, thank you. Okay, let's just begin here. So you basically make the argument that I'm drunk on fame and that is the reason why I have let out the truth about who I am, which makes me a Jew hater. First thing you say is that this is a woman who is such an anti-Semite and so ignorant of history that in 2018 she publicly said that Hitler was okay. Do you actually believe that I publicly said that Hitler was okay?
So from the recording that I heard, including the congressional testimony, which I think was taken out of context, and from the comments that you said, okay, and you correct if I'm wrong, but my understanding from your comments is you were asked a question about nationalism.
Mm-hmm. Nationalism.
And you responded about nationalism using the example that nationalism was good and that what Hitler did, Hitler was nationalistic in Germany, and that was okay. You have said specifically you think Hitler is a horrible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you have condemned Hitler, thank God, without question. And you also brought him up in that discussion about nationalism. Is that all accurate?
So when you just write that Hitler was okay, that is dishonest because what I actually was saying was answering a question, as you brought up, where we were not even talking about Jews, not talking about the Holocaust. A woman was asking about whether or not it's okay for people today to say that they're nationalist when it's often associated as a dirty word. And what I was saying was that it's wrongly associated with Hitler. I don't believe that Hitler was a nationalist because obviously Hitler invaded Poland. He obviously had ambitions outside of... So we have the clip. We have the clip. So we're going to play it. So again, the question that's being asked of me is whether or not nationalism is an okay word to embrace. Let's play the clip so you can hear me and what I actually
said. Yes, it is.
Absolutely.
Sorry about you.
I actually don't have any problems at all with the word nationalism. I think that it gets the definition gets poisoned by elitists that actually want globalism. Globalism is what I don't
Boom.
Want. So when you think about whenever we say nationalism, the first thing people think about at
least
in America.
I can debate this fool.
He was a national socialist, but if Hitler just wanted to make Germany great and have things run well, okay, fine. The problem is that he had dreams outside of Germany. He wanted to globalize. He wanted everybody to be German.
He's
everybody
not German.
German. Everybody to be a different way. That's not, to me, that's
Jewish.
Not nationalism.
He's Austrian.
So again, we're trying there to define nationalism. Does your statement, she publicly said that Hitler was okay, is that an honest statement?
Yeah, so let's talk about this for a moment. Is that okay?
Okay, yeah, let's talk about it.
You were asked a question about nationalism.
Yeah.
You responded
with
the example of Adolf Hitler.
Yes, I said because Americans associate, the reason why they think it's a dirty word is because of Adolf Hitler.
You responded, and you have subsequently, and I've seen you subsequently, and I think you even said it at the congressional hearing, you have obviously condemned him for who he was. But you brought Hitler's name into the discussion.
Correct.
And you justified that this is how America feels or how people feel. And that's your take on it. It's not necessarily accurate. In fact, it probably isn't from an actual sociological standpoint. But that's your opinion. Fine.
Sociological.
But Candace, you put in the same sentence what he did if it just had stayed in Germany was okay. But more importantly, and here's a piece of the anti-Semitism. Why bring one of the most evil men of history into the discussion? You could just...
Because she was asked about it. Because she just said that... Go ahead.
Yeah, she just said that Hitler is not a real representation of nationalism because he attacked Poland. He was not like
how can he be a nationalist if he's not German? He's Austrian. Like I'm correct. I'm correct. I'm not the one. I'm really not the one, honey. I study state nationalism as a fuck. I'm not the one. I'm really not. He wants to play the state nationalism with me? Oh, let's play. I feel like that's going to be a problem for him. That's going to be a problem. So
he's twisting every single thing she says. He doesn't hear her, and he repeats it back to her as something completely different than what she's saying.
He's choosing to hear what he wants to hear from her. That's why, as she just pointed out, he's like, oh, well, nationalism is really a problem. It isn't? No, it is not. How do you think you get rights in America? You're a state national, not a citizen. You don't know anything about law. You're just a religious zealot. That's the problem. It has nothing to do – state nationalism has nothing to do with your religion. It has to do with a social status that you have legally in law. I'm correct. How dare him? How dare this person? He doesn't know anything about American politics, nothing. So,
what are your thoughts, Danielle?
Well, I kind of want to throw things.
She's an Aries, darling. She's an Aries. She's like, come with me. I swear to you, the last thing you do on this planet. So funny.
I love that she is trying to... prove liable, right? I think I said defamation earlier, but defamation is the spoken
word. For sure. Libel's written, defamation is spoken. Yeah.
Correct. And so I think she's trying to further prove her case in law that he, that this is defamation. Libel.
It's slander.
And
it's slander. That's what it is.
It's
yeah.
Precisely. Thank you. And we're not going to continue with this whole thing. However, I would love to... Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I have to bring you down this hole.
But this is a hole.
You know?
This is me and Danielle watching the COVID things on C-SPAN being like, how dare... Like, we're just screaming at the television. Anyway,
Well, it's funny that you bring that up because it does have the same, it smacks of the same type of argument. It's the exact same thing as the COVID arguments and the BLM arguments. Just not, it's a straw man argument. It's a straw man argument. Yeah. It's creating.
It's straw man and non sequitur. He brings up other points that are not the actual point, non sequitur. So you see what they do? They argue in circles around themselves. It's very interesting.
Right.
He's not addressing what she's saying. He's pretending like she said something else and then attacking that.
Exactly.
That's by definition, a straw man argument.
By definition.
And
by definition.
All he's doing is reading his written word about her. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But I, you know, like that's what's going on right now. And in the worst way possible. Now, I'm not going to go too much further in this, but there is a segment because he brings up a Tucker Carlson interview where mm-hmm. he talks about Palestine. And I'll stop after that, but let's continue.
Yeah, let's go.
Given any negative examples of nationalism, you chose to bring Hitler on, not them.
I did, and I have no. If I could go backwards, in the context of trying to understand why Americans think that nationalism is a bad word, it was appropriate for me to bring off Adolf Hitler. It is totally appropriate in any capacity when you are talking about history and historical sentiments to bring up any relevant character that has created those sentiments. So I just want to yes or no. After watching that, I want to make sure we don't run out of time here. After watching that in context, do you think it is fair that you wrote, she publicly said that Hitler was okay? Hitler was okay.
Yes, by bringing me even into the conversation, yes, I do.
Let's move on here, because I had this discussion. We're having it between us, but I want the public to be able to, you know, deduce what's fair and what's not fair.
Well done.
You then wrote this statement. A mere month after the horrors of babies being beheaded, women being raped, and the slews of horrors from Hamas, Owens went on Tucker Carlson's show to speak about how it really wasn't that bad and why should she even care? After all, she seems to think that Hitler was okay, so what's the problem? Is that true that I went on Tucker Carlson's show and said that October 7th really wasn't that bad?
Actually, it did. You did it through the implications and the words. And I actually do know where
implications.
Some of those are. We watched it multiple times. Mm-hmm. And you specifically say you want to have an academic discussion. You specifically say, I don't want to misquote you. That you believe you have a moderate stance.
Okay.
Because you see the children dying, and on both sides, you talk about the pain, and I think you do feel pain about Gaza. And this goes back to the anti-Semitism campus.
Okay.
What happened October 7th is unique.
It's unique.
It is
not rare.
To even make a moral equivalency, this is one of the keys in anti-Semitism.
Even though you do that the entire time.
Yes.
Is that an inappropriate moral equivalency is created. When someone says that this race, these people, whomever, are like dogs, they've made a moral equivalency between those people and dogs, that is bigotry. That is hatred.
I first want to debunk the idea that I did not, like I in any way said it really wasn't that bad. That statement never came out of my mouth, and I also want to show that actually, contrary to that, I condemned what Hamas did. So let's just show that clip of what I said, and then I want to get to your quotation about academic discussion. Let's just show what I said about Hamas.
I have seen every single person, including myself, condemn what happened on October 7th. Because who wouldn't condemn terrorism? It's obvious.
Right.
Who would not condemn innocent Israelis dying? But if you then say that it is also sad when an innocent Palestinian child dies, suddenly this is pro-Hamas, or you need to say, even when you're talking about how sad it is that a child dies, you need to button that statement by saying, but that child was a human shield.
Okay, all right, you guys, I'm going to give you a little bit of a warning.
Okay.
The next statement is gag-worthy. So here we go.
I'm so excited.
I'm about to flip my hair, bitch.
As
a mother, that's not going to be my response as somebody who is about to give birth when I see these images of children involved on both sides of the conflict. I have pointed to the people that are mocking dead Israeli children and said that they are horrific. I am even keel on this matter, and yet people think that you need to be extreme. So people that have become more radical and extreme are perceiving a moderate stance as not enough. And
because people can disagree with you or agree with you or whatever, but you certainly don't seem radical on this topic.
And I'm going to hold here before you comment on that, because your next sentence, as you just said, she wanted to talk about the depravities of Hamas as an academic discussion and refused to even condemn Hamas. So we just saw that I did condemn Hamas. And regarding the academic discussion...
No, you didn't. I'm sorry. No, you made a moral equivalency between Hamas and Gaza.
I didn't do
that. There is no moral equivalency. What Hamas did is evil. It is not a tragedy, only it is evil. I'm sorry, Candace. but you make an equivalency that does not exist in most people's minds, and certainly in no Jew's minds.
Okay, so I'm glad that you said that, so people can hear what I actually said and hear what you are saying and how you are taking it. I don't know how you could write this statement, she refused to condemn Hamas, when I literally said who would not condemn these horrific
because
events.
You don't condemn them uniquely evil. You put them in a para-pursue relationship.
So you're saying that even though I did, now you're admitting that I did condemn Hamas,
Hamas. What condemnation is? Is this where you really want to go, is have an English discussion?
No. You wrote, she refused to condemn Hamas. These are your words.
Because when you put that, the moment you say that they have a moral equivalency with anything else, that's not condemnation, no matter what.
I said it's sad. When an innocent,
it's not condemnation, and
is it,
it's not.
I'll just ask you a question. Is it sad? Is it sad? Sure.
Here it goes. Get your gag buckets ready. Here it comes.
Okay.
I love it. I love watching insecure males. I love watching insecure males do this. I love it. That is my favorite. She nailed him, and he just. Do you see how he reacted? Do you see how he did that? I love that.
It gets worse.
I love that. That's my favorite. Thank you, Danielle. Thank you, Danielle, for playing that entire clip. Thank you so much for that. We needed that.
We're not even done. The worst is
not
even here. Get your buckets ready. 3, 2, 1.
I got it.
Do you think it is sad when an innocent Palestinian child dies?
Candace, I cry every day.
Be silent. Be silent.
And this is one of the things you really
want to see. Ty, this is so bad.
Can you put it back so I can hear it?
I apologize.
Yep.
I got excited.
Okay.
Play it again.
I was throwing things at the TV, Ty, so I totally get it. Here we go. I just rewound it.
I apologize, everyone. Play it again.
No, it's okay. 3, 2, 1.
Clearly what we are having here is just a disagreement. There's no reason to get angry. Do you think it is sad when an innocent Palestinian child dies?
Candace? I cry every day, and it's not just for Israel. And this is one of the things you clearly do not understand, the same way most don't, who are anti-Semites, who don't get it. I cry for what's going on in Israel. I cry just as much for what we are forced to do. Golda Meir had a great quote. She said that one day we may be able to forgive them for killing Israeli children. We will never be able to forgive them for making us kill their children.
What about my statement of saying that
I'm going to pause it right there.
So I did not know that was Golden Line.
Oh my gosh.
I remember.
Wow. The silence is mother effing deafening, sweetheart darling. Wow.
I've heard this quote before. I didn't realize it was gold in my ear. Ew. I wonder what the context
is there. I am absolutely stunned, Danielle. I'm stunned. I really am. I don't have words. I have nothing to say.
And she got fired after this.
Yeah,
she exposed this fraud on public on a public platform. Did you hear this person? Wow. Wow.
I'm
going
to keep playing for a little bit. I need to take a potty break, so I'm going to play for a little bit.
I want to hear Catherine's thoughts. I want to hear Catherine's thoughts right now. I need to hear Catherine speak right at this moment. Please tell me what you thought about that right now. Please do.
Well, I think it goes along with everything he's been saying, which is like self-contradictory and just directing a fake thing that doesn't exist and fighting it. And, you know, you made me kill you. That's classic abuse.
Oh, my God.
That's like
oh my God.
The classic abuser. You made me hurt you. Why did you make me hurt you?
Oh, my God,
like,
Catherine.
Haven't you known somebody who, like, hurt you
maybe
physically or yelled at you and then just said, why do you always make me so angry? Why do you
that's Albert Camus quote, darling. We had to do that. The cabal's exact thing is that We have to do this to you because you're not in control. We have to. We have are the alibis of tyrants. Those are the alibis of tyrants. We have to destroy you because otherwise, how would you do it yourself? That was scary. That scared me.
It
made me terrified. It really did.
Dude, he cries every day. He cries every day.
He didn't say for Palestinians. He said for Israel. He said, I cry every day. He didn't say for who. That's nefarious garbage.
Ty, he said not just for Israelis. Not just for Israel. Something like that. But he wouldn't say... clearly said, are you sad for the children who die in Gaza? Palestinian children? He said,
He said, why did you make me do this to you? Why did, that's scary.
Can I replay
that's
it?
That's scary.
We tried
so
I'm
going to
replay it.
So scary.
3, 2, 1.
Most don't. We're anti-Semitic. Don't get it. I cry for what's going on in Israel. I cry just as much for what we are forced to do.
Oh, I can't.
Golda Meir had a great quote. She said that one day we may be able to forgive them for killing Israeli children. We will never be able to forgive them for making us kill their children.
Freudian slip.
No, it's not.
That is so
they
scary.
Mean it.
That is so
they
scary.
Say what they
that
mean.
Is so
they
scary.
Mean it, but in any sense, it's repulsive. There's
no,
I mean, no,
completely right, Catherine. Completely right. Like that is so. That is the most abysmal thing. You said that in public. We have that undocumented record that you said that right now. Or you're in public. We can see you. How embarrassing. How shameful. I can't.
No,
I can't
they
do
have
this.
To tell us.
They have to tell us. Is that what you just said?
Yes,
they have to tell us. They can't do anything unless you consent. They can't rule you without slavery requires consent.
When they say that it's anti-Semitic to say that they're blood-drinking, you know, evil, satanic horn people, you know, like, what else are we supposed to think in this situation?
Right. What do you want us to do? Like, what are the logical implications that we're not supposed to accept when you say things like this to our face? I don't know what they expect from us. I really don't know what they expect. I really just don't know.
Comments. Are you going to go any further with that, or was that the barf bucket moment?
I actually don't want to hear any more from him after that. I really don't. I'm done. I'm done with that. That is obscene. That's outrageous. That's outrageous.
We're 31
okay, I wanted
minutes
to...
into an hour and 43. I don't think we do need to go any further.
No.
And Lori Suzuki is supposed to call in at some point. Have you guys ever heard from Lori Suzuki? She's supposed to call in and teach us about law and all that after that. But I'm like, I can't believe that I've heard those statements on a public platform. I can't believe that. I'm stunned. I'm literally stunned. So
everyone should, for their own good, rewatch, you know, or watch the rest of it and get your throwing arm ready. But I think that's all we need to talk about for now.
Wow.
Okay. I wanted to respond with an article about these rape allegations. So they say there's a lot, if I Google it, a lot of things come up that say reasonable grounds to believe conflict-related sexual abuse. UN says convincing information, sexual violence committed by Hamas. AP News, rape and sexual assault took place during Hamas attack. NPR, UN reasonable grounds to believe rapes occurred.
Mm.
Well, this is so interesting to me, and I don't want to go too far afield, but UN, is this a trustworthy source? I seem to recall UN not investigating Ukraine's acts of war crimes, where they were embedding with civilians. And getting the Russians to attack them in in like apartment complexes and stuff like that. And then the Buka, that was obviously an inside job to make Russia look horrible, including a lot of the dead that were photographed. They weren't bloated enough to look like they'd been there the number of days that were on the like party line narrative. Also, a lot of them had the white armbands that signified they were receiving Russian aid, and they had Russian aid boxes. These people, the corpses that were photographed, people can look that up. So
could that have
all
been
went
on the
UN
concert
UN
goer?
Said nothing. What's that?
Could that have been the concert goers with the white armbands?
That was in Buka. Sorry, that was in Buka in Ukraine. I'm talking about.
Right. But Catherine, do you feel that was a credible source?
Sorry, what?
I don't even know myself. I'm not sure myself if I know that was a credible. How do you feel? Do you feel that was a credible source?
What I'm talking about with the UN's analysis of Buka being Russian perpetrated, to my eyes, which I've done, tells me that it was an inside job to frame, like, make Russia look horrible in the eyes of the world.
Yeah.
And they have not.
I agree with you.
UN hasn't called out any of the Ukraine war crimes against Russian, so-called Russian separatists, which were Ukrainians. These were Ukrainians.
Right.
So anyway, I'm just saying.
I agree with you on that point specifically.
I
agree. That's why I was like, I feel like me and Catherine agree with on that point that there's a front there. I feel like I know that she knows what's going on. Keep going.
I'm trying to introduce this idea of all these headlines say, UN says reasonable grounds for believing that Hamas used sexual violence. So I just wanted to examine that. And here was an article, a little lone article. I just wanted to read a little bit of it.
Please do that. And then I said I was done with this interview, but I do want to play one more short segment. So go ahead with that, and then one more short segment.
Okay. Following Hamas October 7th attacks that resulted in at least 1,163 deaths, rumors began circulating that Israeli women were experiencing horrific mass rape and sexual violence. Months later, a position paper by Physicians for Human Rights Israel and a New York Times investigation convinced many observers that Hamas used rape as a weapon of war. But an investigation by Yes, which is the name of this magazine, examining both reports, other media investigations, hundreds of news articles, interviews with Israeli sources, and photo and video evidence reveals a shocking conclusion: there is no evidence mass rape occurred. The New Yorker, New York Times, Associated Press, and The Nation treat PHRI's paper as the gold standard for proof of Hamas's rape and sexual violence, but the paper is shockingly thin. It lacks original reporting and is based on media reports that are dubious at best, with no corroboration, no forensic evidence, no survivor testimony, no video evidence. During a two-hour-long interview that was heated at times, Hadass Ziv, Director of Ethics and Policy at Physicians for Human Rights Israel, acknowledged numerous problems with the position paper she co-authored, quote, sexual and gender-based violence as a weapon of war during October 7th, 2003 Hamas attacks. Ziv admitted credibility problems with sources and that she did not review all available evidence. She was, quote, unaware numerous sources had fabricated atrocity stories about October 7th. Ziv said, yeah, that's a problem, about a soldier, she quotes, whose claim of rape was changed by the government. She quoted volunteers from Zaka, a scandal-plagued organization that collected human remains after October 7th, but Ziv did not realize Zaka openly talks of inventing stories. when discussing claims that women's sexual organs were deliberately mutilated, Steve conceded, okay, if there's alternative explanations, you can't say that, while admitting, quote, I did not know all the stories that you speak about that discredit those witnesses. Steve also lashed out, I feel like I'm a rape victim that's being interrogated. Yes responded, not every interview is a friendly interview. So anyway, I'll just leave that there. It's called yesmagazine.org, and the title of the article is Claims of Mass Rape by Hamas Unravel Under Investigation. And people can just look at that and give it some thought and maybe look at some other sources just to question, like, why are we being told that there was all this rape? It is very sensational. It does capture the attention, and it reminds me, as I said earlier, of those babies being ripped from incubators stories in, you know, as grounds for war previously. So just wanted to
I need Catherine to narrate everything. Could we just do that? I just love her voice. She's very soothing.
Oh, thank
okay,
that's
you. All I have to say. Bye. Thank you. I love you.
Let me just play this one last clip, okay?
Thank you. Hi.
Love you.
So I'm going to ask you simple questions that would define anti-Semitism with the vast majority of rabbis, Jews, and theologians.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe October 7th was uniquely evil and on a whole other level than anything going on, especially anything going on in Gaza or anything else right now? From the moral, ethical, your point of view as a Christian, I am asking you point blank, do you feel that October 7th, what happened, is uniquely at a whole other level and depth of evil? Yes or no?
I believe that what happened on October 7th is evil. We've seen.
Do you believe it is a whole other level than anything
uniquely
else, especially what is going on in Gaza?
I think that there have been things that have happened historically, like the Holocaust, like what the Bolsheviks did to Christians, the Christian Holocaust.
Yeah.
That I
mean, Rabbi shaking his head. No. Not, yeah, no. He's like, she's like, okay, so, you know, let's just say that we believe the history that 6 million Jews died during the Holocaust. Are we really, he wants her to admit that what happened, you know, according to record, that 1,400 people died in Israel on October 7th is uniquely evil. Can somebody please look up the definition of uniquely? We've already done all anti-Semite, unique. Can we please look up what unique means? It's not rare. It's not sometimes, it's not mostly. What is the definition of unique?
Being the only one of its kind, unlike anything else.
That's
okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Danielle St. John, ladies and gentlemen.
Can we just please look at what fucking words mean? Look up the term fucking.
Yeah, that's
I don't
it.
Care.
That's the definition.
Do you all see why she's my sister? That's why she's my sister. I'm like, ladies and gentlemen, Danielle St. John. All right. Anyway.
All I'm doing is
belonging or connect. So here are the definitions. Being the only one of its kind, unlike anything else, quote, that this discovery was unique in history. Archaic. A unique person or thing. Some of Lamb's writing were so memorably beautiful as to be uniques in their class. So,
maybe
one
every snowflake
early
17th is
century from French, from Latin, unicus, from Eunice, one.
Unicus.
Unique. Of course, it's not unique. And why should you try to make somebody tell you it's unique? And if they don't, then they're just anti-Semitic. Like,
But also, being unique doesn't make you useful, darling. I'm unique, too. It doesn't make me useful. Depends on if you're actually useful, but continue.
How is that unique? Okay, so somebody bombs somebody because they're being oppressed. Like, that's the oldest story in the book.
Come on, Catherine. Come on, Catherine. Tell them, bitch.
Well, I mean, that's about the least unique thing I can think of.
No, it's not unique.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Oh, my. Did you just. Oh, my. You better tell them.
Killing 1,400 people is not.
You better say it, bitch. You better say it. Okay, keep going. I'm sorry. I'm excited. I'm so sorry. Keep going.
Can you imagine Candace having to talk to this guy? Like, in just live?
How did she do it?
She did a fantastic job.
Yeah, she's very grateful under fire.
And she got fired anyway.
It just reminds me of dealing with a psychopath.
Yes! I believe that one, by
that
modern definition of the hate that mutates, would make you an anti-Semitic. Kate, sorry about that, but you're anti-Semitic. So am I, so is Ty, so is Lily.
Yep.
We're all anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the hate that mutates.
But she is so lenient and nice. Like, even you guys are very tolerant with me, but, like, can you imagine, like, me and him, it even been a discussion. I would have been screaming at this motherfucker the whole motherfucker. Men don't get along the way we do. He was so condescending to her from the very moment she started. I was like, you don't talk to women like that. You just don't. That's first of all, you just don't do that. He has no respect for her as a woman. That's what she had to say. He doesn't respect her. That's all it was. He's a rabbi. He just doesn't respect women. That's what it is. Sorry, he just
well
doesn't.
Said. I would love to see you talk to that guy. I would love to see you just hammer that guy. Because he deserves
it. I would destroy him. You know I would. I would destroy him.
Yeah.
He's got that nice baritone voice. I'm like, oh, say something else. Are you sure, though? Well, mm-hmm. You know the first question I would ask him? What do you know about state nationals in the United States Constitution? Listen to me right now. List to me what you know about state nationals, because you're against nationalism, right? Right? Because you're so hard. See, men have a different thing. When men approach other men, you better approach us with motherfucking respect. There's going to be a problem. But he thought because she was a woman that he could just talk over her or interrupt her. These religious zealot people from any religion, I don't care who you are, come correct. Really. Really, though. Like, really. So.
We've got
men are obnoxious. I would say, everybody who's here, thank you for tolerating people like me, because Catherine and all, you're all great, but we are men, so we talk over and we're stupid and we get boisterous, but we don't have to deal with the revolution that will be the women leading the charge now. We're very scared of women leading the charge because we know that you're going to, and you're going to save us all, but we're scared of it. We're scared. I want you to know we're scared. We really are terrified of you because you are what's going to lead the charge. That's the period. That's the end of the discussion. So, sorry.
That explains why he treated her that way and why he felt he had to publicly humiliate her and shame her.
She
was outpacing him. She was just running circles around him, and he was so embarrassed and so shameful about it. The way that he approached her was so condescending. How dare him? Like, he's what we call the toxic masculinity. He's not divine masculine at all. He's not. And maybe he was wrong and a woman was right. Oh, maybe a woman was right. How will he go on now? Piece of trash. Anyway.
It just totally reminds me of the psychopathic mindset where they tell you what you're thinking.
Yeah.
And then you feel crazy because you know your own motivations and you know what you said and did, but they're telling you, you did something else, and then they punish you for it. That's classic psychopathy.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Danielle.
No, it's okay. Everybody's energized. We're energized. We're energizing others. And I would like to say that I truly believe I know not everybody believes in the Bible or the tomes, we should say. But I truly believe that our generation here and now is meant to correct the sins of the past, you know. And, you know, back in the day, back in, for the majority of history, men ruled the world. There are certain examples like Deborah in the Bible that, you know, there were no righteous men. And so God appointed a woman to be the judge of men with her husband's permission, of course, back in the day. But she was chosen to judge men. And I really do believe that the correction of the past has to do with women being judges and then giving it back to men. But women have to do it first, and we're seeing it. We're living it, you know.
They're always leading the charge. If you're not scared of an Aries woman, hashtag Daniel St. John, several other people that I know that are Aries women, be forewarned. People like me who are gay men, we're eunuchs. We were plotting against the kingdom to make your kingdom successful, just so you understand that. It's very important. It's very important, darling. Danielle's leading the charge. That's why she's an Aries woman. Beware the Aries woman, darling. I'm just telling you. You were setting the standard, and people are just mad because they couldn't do it. Well, then die salty, bitch. Die salty.
This could be the gospel according to Danielle. I think it is. I know that there's a higher power, and I think we all do. But I also know that we're all living in this very evil time.
Yeah.
We see it everywhere. They tell
us. And you've chosen to unite with us. You could have united against us, and you've chosen not to. So we should be a kind of honor bound, actually, in that way. Cynthia McKinney, like a lot of people, there's a lot of people that could have turned against us, and they chose not to. Let's just be honor bound to people, really, in this way. We don't have to teach you how to raise chickens or your children or anything. We don't have to do anything. We're doing because it's better for the foundations right now in Aquarius. We are setting the foundations that are they cannot be reproached. They can't be by rabbis or anybody else. If we set the standard now, it will be unbreakable. You'll be indestructible. You'll be invincible. And that's why they're mad. That's why they are. They're very upset about it. That they can't control it anymore. They're losing ground. Good.
I also think I need you're brilliant. But I also think I need to clarify what the Bible says about sons and servants and the difference.
Mm. Mm.
And I believe that Jews and Muslims and Christians, really, but Jews and Muslims have the same father. You know, we're going back to Abrahamic times. And so the family squabble that's going on, could it really just be, very easily broken? We can bring it back to a family squabble. Christians are, there are different things. There are different, there are differences between sons and servants, and that is not to invalidate anything that Jews and Muslims are doing. Jews and Muslims, halal, kosher, it's the same diet. The history, it's the same thing. This is the same tribe, right? Christians are the sons. They're sons and they're servants. Nobody's wrong, and unless these people who are servants are trying to say that Christians are wrong. Like, that's really the difference for me, is that as long as we all play our roles, what's the harm? Well, I think the divides put up through centuries and generations, that's deliberate, I really do believe that if you're a Jew and that if you're a Muslim or if you're a Christian, we all have different roles to play. And if you're trying to divide us, if you're trying to say that any of it is wrong, and I'm not saying that Christians are all correct. I'm not saying that Muslims are all correct. I'm not saying that Jews are all correct. But what I am saying is that all of these things, all of these divides should be recognized. The original point of the show today, the original title of the show, is to starve Moloch. We all need to understand that our point, that our value, that our principle, that our that the meaning of life is to starve this evil that keeps us enslaved. How are you doing it? Is it by fighting against Christians or fighting against Jews or fighting against Muslims? Is that the point? I don't think it is. I think the point of it, of starving Moloch, is to come together and figure out how we starve the reptiles, the loose, you know, keep it away from what we're supposed to be bound to, what we're, you know, like all of our energy is supposed to be sucked into this louche. If we finally said, gosh, maybe that Abraham was walking down the road and read in the stars that he was going to be the father of many nations and created the Muslims and the Jews and the Christians. Instead of seeing it as a divide, what if we all came together and fought against it and planted food? And instead of thinking, you know, we're fighting against different groups, we came together and we nourished the collective. What would happen? What if we starved Moloch?
Yeah, it's like we need alternative systems that we can nurture and validate one another rather than looking to the systems that have been in place for decades that we rely on. Like the
Danielle, I hate you. You know that, don't you? I hate Danielle so much because she just gives me Queen of England vibes all the day. She gives me Queen of England. She, like, that's what she does for me. She gives me Queen of England. She's one of those people. I'm like, no, I see it. Like Aries queens, darling. They're Aries female queens. They're like, that's what it is. I mean, same thing with you, Catherine. You really are. They're queens that don't realize that they were the ones who did it, not the kings. We were actually kind of socially conditioned to do certain things, and we speak when we can. But we don't have the articulate, you know, we don't have that. We don't have what we can enforce it, Trump. But you know what I'm saying? Like, we can enforce it, but the people behind the scenes were always women. They were always women. And we just kind of incorporate their what they see the populace needs and therefore go, okay, here's how we will enforce that through our malehood. So we'll enforce it. You all have the actual thing that needs to be happening, but you can't enforce it as women. We can as men. You see the balance of gender? Gender is the seventh principle of natural law. So we'll enforce it. We don't have the ideas. You all have the ideas. So we will force it. We will come to the means of understanding. Here's what they mean, and here's how we can do this. Here's how we can articulate this to a physical and pragmatic and egalitarian mode. And
yeah,
so people like me who are gays, it's like it's very hard because we're both. I'm in between. So I'm like, here's what they mean. We can work together. We can clearly we can do this. It's just a matter of people want to do it or not. You know.
We have to.
So if we meet the right people, it's unstoppable. I'm so honored to be here with Catherine and Lily and I want you to know I so honor people like Danielle for this reason. Like, there's a reason she ran for Congress, darling. There's a reason. There's a reason she ran for Congress, sweetie. There's a reason. Like, it's there. It's right there. We just need to understand. We need to understand that we can't understand and then overstand. that we can do this. We really can. We really can do it. It's not that difficult. The moment we get dispersed of our ideologies and our bullshit, there it is. It's right there. The solution is right in front of our eyes. It's so nice. It's so nice.
Yeah, I think the, what you were saying about starving Moloch, what we have to do
starve
is...
Starve him. Starve him. Give him nothing.
In a situation like this, we have to question the narrative. Whenever anybody is characterized as a victim or an aggressor, we have to question it, and we have to look deeper. Mm. We have to look at individuals. Like this thing with Purim, what we were talking about at the beginning, the Purim holiday, and what I was listening to in an interview with Scott Ritter where he was talking about this is a celebration of genocide. And I was like, whoa, really? So I looked it up and I saw like Teen Vogue, for example. What is Purim? Four things to know about history and traditions of the Jewish holiday. Story of Purim is told in the Book of Esther. And they talk about how it's about a heroic woman, and they just spin it. So it's like, okay, so when Haman decided to massacre the Jewish people of Persia, he cast a type of lottery called Purim to determine the day of the genocide. He landed on the 13th day of Adar, the 12th month in the year of the Hebrew calendar. So it's about them stopping this would be genocide against the Jewish people. But then they killed, I don't know, I looked at this other source that says they killed 75,000 Persians. That was their solution. So who's the victor and who's the victim? Who's celebrating what? We're going to celebrate that we
whatever you decide.
Genocide. But what about the fact that you committed genocide yourself? Like,
indeed,
it's just
well.
These are the male problems. So we know that you're going to lead the revolution, but we're trying to prepare you for it. As men, we're trying to lead. There's tough decisions you have to make, and there'll be women that are against you. There are women that are specifically against you. So are you prepared to physically and enforce the policies that you've enacted against other women and other? You know what I mean, like, because men are prepared to do. I want you to know, every male interaction comes with a threat of physical violence.
Right.
So we're used to that. So I want you guys to understand that. I want you guys to understand that when you become in charge, are you prepared to counter women that are not on your side and be able to physically verify and enforce your policies? Because that's what men have to do. We have to.
And that's an amazing question.
Have to do that.
Because honestly, like, okay, so the term bitch is a female dog, and you know that comes with aggression. And I'm not saying that we're animals, but I'm saying that we're animals.
Mm-hmm.
And our conscious, our you know awakened self, continues to try to bring the collective together, and understand and overstand. And fix it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That our collective energy is what keeps us alive. That what, you know, we are God. Like, that's kind of spoiler alert, right? Is that we're all gods. We're all part of God. And the way that you get there, that road has to be a straight and narrow kind of thing. Men look out for, control, right? Because, how many times have we played the story of your enslavement? The first thing is that you can, if you can control a man to give you his eggs, that's the easy, you can do that. You can grow, you can have your own eggs, but if you can control men to give you their eggs, then that is enslavement and the beginning of enslavement, right?
May I say something? As even as a gay male, I didn't realize this later. People, as a lot of women realize, that's why I have a mostly large women following. For some reason, I have an instinctive ability to protect women and children. I make a fully gay male, and you know me, I dress in drag and do all that, but like my instinctive ability is to protect women and children, like at all times. Like at all times. I have that drive to be like, no, actually no. Like there's something in men where we have to instinctively do that.
That's why they don't run away.
It's really important. It's really important that women and children are protected at all costs, in all hazards. And so, therefore, yeah. I will do that. I don't care what the reality is. I just have to do that. So, I there's something instinctively with us where we need to do that. We need to be the providers. We need to be that thing that is the shield. I mean, because you have the ideas and you have the wherewithal to do it, but there are people that will stop you. And if we have to be the shield for you, for people to not stop you, then we will be the shield. And I don't know. That's just where I'm at.
And it's a perversion. It's a perversion of that impulse to protect and to champion right action that's happening now with all these wars, and they're playing on our natural tendency to engage in this. Like,
yeah.
They're manipulating us to think that they're on our side. They're doing what's right for us. And it was so interesting to just listen to that guy talk to Candace and analyze what he was actually saying and his argument technique, because he seems to be a very studied debater or... I don't know.
From the beginning of the interview, didn't I say, like, the moment he addressed her, I was like, he's condescending. I've dated Hasidic or Orthodox Jews. This is how men treat you. They really do. They think you don't know anything about. They really don't. They condescend you. Mm-hmm. They talk over you. And I'm like, I have to fight that urge because I do that too. But like that is the male instinct, is to talk, is to be us.
Well,
we feel
okay.
like we
Let
are
me,
the ones in control
quickly.
All the time. It's very hard. It's very hard for us. It's really hard for us to fight it. I just want you to know it's very hard. So
they may try to cut us off in 3 minutes. I think that
what?
Like I said,
oh, okay.
We
did this whole time, didn't we? Okay. Wow.
No. We didn't. No, we still have a little bit of time, like 15 minutes. But they, anyway, listen to the whole show, you'll understand. They cut us off early.
they cut us off
like,
after like
15 minutes.
First.
15. Okay. All right. So just gonna say that. Now back to Ty's point. There is a doctor. He wrote a book. His name is Dr. Harvey Karp. He wrote a book, and it was called "Happiest Baby on the Block." His thesis was that children, babies, humans are born 3 months premature. And that's why like a baby at full term, you know, can't even lift up its head, right? You can't, can't even move it. But there's a horse that can be running on foul on day one, right? So, you know, how are we the top predator, the apex predator of the planet? How are we in control of all of this if our children are born 3 months premature? Like that would be like they would die. Their parents weren't around. But his theory is that because of our brain and because of the chemicals in our brain, the father stays. Right? Like it's a parabonding influence because of some brain chemicals. We just got our 90-second mark, but I'm sure we're gonna continue. It's gonna continue. Anyway, his theory is that men stay around and we should treat the first trimester, the first 3 months as 3 months premature. Like, you know, simulate the womb as much as possible, right? I know this is like getting into the weeds, but it really does make sense that the reason that men stay around is because we are so like advanced that we know if the man and the woman encounter a lion, you're going to need the woman to pick the baby up and run and the man to defend the lion. I know that was long-winded, but I think we did come back to Ty's point of why do I have a primal instinct to stay and protect the young? It's because there's a whole lot of lions out there. And in order to succeed and to thrive as a civilization, we have to be a part of a community. That's it. Like, that's really, like, the answer is that we have to be a part of the community. No, because of sexual bonding with a mother to protect a child or to be a part of a village, we all have to be here and play our role for civilization.
100%.
Well, that
and we all
that,
have those aspects as well.
For sure.
Both the male and the female aspects. Like, I mean, Candace is being quite a warrior, I must say. Very
it's all that oxytocin she's got going on because she just had a baby. You know what I mean? Like, but that
there you
exactly
go. So
when
the
she did that
warrior.
Tucker Carlson interview, she was like 40 weeks pregnant.
Wow. Amazing.
So amazing.
But we should
discuss gender though soon though. Again, we should have a gender conversation. There's a lot of things we could really talk about the next episode for sure. So I'm there for it. I'm there.
We still have 15 minutes, you guys.
You better start talking now.
I just know that we could really go in depth with that, but I'm like, I've been feeling that so much lately. I'm just like, I'm so protective of women and children now. I'm like, I don't know why I have that need. I just feel it instinctively. I don't know what's going on, but it's there.
Well, I mean,
so
I
even
think,
as a gay,
I think
even as a gay male, it's still there. So
well, the humanity only, is under attack, all of us.
But yeah, and we should do that in the next 10 minutes. But what I'm saying is that everybody here is part of a collective.
Yep.
And it has nothing to do with the gender roles that are put on us as people, you know, as society.
So that's
what we, you know what I mean? Like, it is such a slippery slope, you guys. And I'm here for it. I'm here for this conversation that's being set up right now for next week. Nobody can do this easily unless you have, like, spoilers. But it is such a hot topic. Gender that it kind of goes to the core of it.
Yeah,
there's a 100%. Lot of aspects, and it's really being manipulated right now. Young people's gender ideations are being manipulated.
You guys have inspired me
so much. You have no idea how much you've inspired. That's why I talk the way I do on my feed, and people are just like, but why are you? I'm like, no, there's a reason. You need to listen to them. You need to actually listen, not to hear. There's a difference between hearing people and listening. Listen to them and what they have to say, and then incorporate it. I mean, it's hard. It's very hard. It wasn't easy for me as a man to do this either. I mean, I just sit down and be like, women have things to say? Oh, my God, because I'm that person. I'm still a man. So I'm like, women, ew. And then I was like, no, but they actually have all the points, though. They have all the points. So let's kind of figure out what's going on here. You know what I mean? Like, let's figure out what's going on here and, like, work with it, you know? So.
Yeah, well, because, and honestly, certainly. I have to say that it's probably just slightly because, honestly, women have the upper edge at this point in human history. We can Google
Finally.
Things. We can,
Finally.
You know, rely on just raise me. Like, this is how I'm able to do it, was able to raise my own children. And so I had time to be home with them, which society doesn't really allow. I was able to be home with my children.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was able to have that extra time. I'm not even saying that it, you know, staying home is the only way you can do this. But I was able to research for the first time, get away from that very democratic point of view. I was a Democrat since I was, not born, but every time I was in school, right? School in California, and I presume in a lot of Democratic states, is an education of a different kind.
No.
Yeah.
So have you homeschooled your kids?
Yeah.
Did
not
you?
Always.
Yeah.
Did you?
Not always.
Just did you start that during the pandemic, or was that separate decision? Yeah.
By the way, those of you who are wondering to know my background, by the way, I was raised by a straight single father, not my mother. I had a black mm-hmm. father that I grew up with for 18 years, and I'm still gay anyway. Thank you. So there
right.
you go. There you go. There you fucking go. I just want you to know.
Yeah, it's like a soul thing. It's a
it's
deeper.
My father, I'm not one of the black families where the father left. He kept me. He didn't want her to be a part of it. He was like, no, I'm raising my son to teach him how to be a man. And he did. And it turns out I was gay anyway. But I still understand the respectability and gentlemanness of men. See?
Right.
See how that works?
It doesn't
there
matter how
Done.
Far away from society we journey. Society is what holds us back, right?
There it is.
Like, for
there
instance,
it is.
Yeah, for instance, you should have, and we all should have, like we can't, I don't know parents for this kind of stuff. They were just as brainwashed as what we just broke out
of. Of course they were.
You know?
More so.
Yep,
more
right,
so.
Right, right, exactly.
More so.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you know, we breaking out of our social norms is a rare thing. Of course, we're not going to say unique, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, because it's a rare thing for us to wake up. We got to wake up.
Well, no, we're talking about, it's fine being unique, because I'm unique too. We're all unique, but we're useful. Just because people claim to be unique doesn't mean they are useful. So make yourself useful, other than just being unique. Unique does not make you useful. There it is.
No, it doesn't. Exactly. It
there
makes
it is.
You.
There it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. It makes you
I
useful.
I would say men do have a lot to say, and they have a lot of understanding of society and the way things run and politics. I think women have not to be stereotypical, but we have a deeper connection to our emotions, synthesizing information and connection to our subconscious mind and the spiritual realm.
Ruled by the moon.
Don't have anything
the moon. I love me some Catherine Grant, honey. I love me some Catherine Grant all day, every day. God, yes. Yes, she did. Yes, ma'am. Okay.
Well, I said what I wanted to say, so thank you.
I'm terrible today. I'm so terrible today. I'm sorry.
I can't maintain a thought after this praise.
This is the most fun we've had in a while, I feel like. It's been a while. We've had it was like fun. It was fun. It really was fun tonight.
Yes.
It really was.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so fun hearing that absolute bastard.
Yeah. Inspirational too. We only have a few minutes left in the show, and I want to share a personal story about a camping trip last weekend. Okay.
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 It was after hours. And you know, sitting by the campfire, the children had all gone to bed, but the adults were still around. It's a big party that we do the weekend after Easter every year in Ocotillo Wells, California. And we've gone about, six times. I've only gone a few times. The kids are now, you know, part of this thing. So it's a camping trip. But the adults, of course, stay up after hours and we talk and we bond. And there's one woman who comes every year who was trying to understand what we're doing. She goes, you know, like, obviously we can, because I say, we can talk about the problems all day long. How do we, what are we doing? What's our solution? And I say that we've kind of deduced it down to food, news, and health for the basics, right? Mm-hmm. But all resources need to be taken back, right? And mm-hmm. she's like, well, I live in an apartment complex. I can't plant food on the side of the road, you know? I have a mm-hmm. high-level job where I can't, you know, pick up a microphone and say what I want to say. What do I do? And I've never really had a good answer for that question, knowing that food, news, and health are the most important, but obviously every resource needs to be taken back. And so housing is what she brought up. That's the first thing she brought up. How are we doing?
Part of it. It's part of the health and food is homesteading, like what you're doing.
And,
which,
you know,
having a home with where you can grow food.
Yes. Well, that's true. So what if you're somebody who's still well into the system, has great paying corporate jobs, a couple, no children, and you want to help? Can't grow strawberries, you know, can't do much. My solution, and this is the first answer that that I've gotten so far from myself, it's been a hard question to answer, is, well, buy local. First of all, you know, buy local. Take your money out of the stores and buy eggs from people who have eggs because they woke up. You know, there are people that are farther along and they've got thriving businesses taking resources back from the loot with food, with news, with health, but on a local level, right? Do you personally know somebody who sells eggs? Either of you? Besides me?
I did, and then I lost track of them. I also used to buy goat's milk from a lady, and then she disappeared during the pandemic, but I get your point, and I like where you're going with this. This is very empowering.
I have for several, but it's allowing them to speak. It's really what it is. Because I have a tendency, as you know who I am, I want to listen to people's perspectives. Because a lot of people would say more if I wouldn't talk over them or be – I'm that person. But I'm trying to learn to be like, I want to hear what everybody has to say. And then, like, there's things they can provide, but they feel like they're too intimidated by us, by the way. We're very intimidated. We're very strong personalities. So we have to realize our strong personalities, that people will speak if we allow them to speak without anything. Just like let them, go through the full tirade as we do, And then they go, you know what, I'm going to go on a tirade too. Good. Let us sit there and listen to their tirade and just go through it and be like, yes, 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 or no, no, no. We don't have to agree. They want the ability to speak. They want without crucifixion or you know what I mean? Like, we're not, there's no punishment. If me and Daniel and Catherine, we have no punishment for you speaking to us. We want you to say your piece. Please do. Please do. As long and as valuable as we need, and then we will have the discussion. Dialectic needs to be brought back to the discussion. We want dialectic, darling. That's what we want, sweetie. Sweetie, darling.
Hi, do you know of, like, local food producers in your area?
I do. I know, and also not only that, but also clothing producers and everything. The trades are back. Trades have returned, darling. They really have. They really have returned. It depends on who we can message and why. Lori Suzuki, there's a lot of people that are like, there's law. There's a lot of things we can do. It depends on how we work together without the cabal separately. If we work together with trades, we can do this. Can do it. We really can.
Yes, that was a great point, Danielle. And thanks for introducing the topic.
Lady Aries, darling. Queen Aries, Danielle St. John, sweetheart, darling.
Oh. Well, okay, so we are at the end of the show now. Gosh, what a fantastic.
Now we're done.
We only because there's a show that's coming up right now, and we cut her off by 3 seconds last time. But
yeah.
Great show coming up soon. Stay tuned for that. But we'll see you guys next week. Please share this if you
next
can.
Next week, darling.
Yes.
Yep.
We love you all, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye, everyone. We love you. Bye, Danielle.
Bye.
Come on.
We love you.